Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Thursday, December 19, 2024. This is your award-winning Gable Nation Media Assassination, episode 1722.
This is No Agenda.
Banging eggnog and broadcasting live, almost live, from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6 in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I'm here avoiding the spike protein, I'm John C. Dvorak.
Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Yes, everybody. Welcome to episode 1722, a best of, but we're here to get you ready for it as I am traveling to my sister for the holidays. This is something different. Well, not really different, but something that I think is timely, this one.
They're all timely. We did a climate change one's kind of a evergreen timely.
Yeah, but this particular one, which Strokey Bill put together for us in two parts, takes us all the way back to the very beginning of COVID. Actually, comes in with I believe it starts with the testing, and man, when remember that testing?
Then we talked about the spinning and spin it up.
How many of those kits do you still have? How many of those test kits do you still have at the house?
Well, these are the kits that came in later. Yeah, I have probably two or three cases of them because they always give them away. They're giving them away free. And when you order a batch from the government or from your local pharmacy, they give you five or six of them.
Yeah.
And they're useless, but they're kind of decorative.
Well, I mean, just look at now. I mean, Tina and I take ivermectin weekly.
Well, you know, it was hydroxychloroquine that was the first obscure drug that came into the conversation.
That's right. I forgot.
Don't forget that.
Hydroxychloroquine.
As soon as Trump mentioned it, it was verboten. Because this was the era we have to always remember. It's kind of hard to, but it's all I have to remember because it's so long ago. That whatever Trump did, they did the opposite.
Yep.
So Trump suggests he suggests hydroxychloroquine, and so it's bad.
Yeah.
And then ivermectin came into the conversation later, and it became bad, too.
Horse paste. What are you doing, you crazy people? So this particular best of, warning, trigger warning, you could get all mad all over again listening to it because you just hear how crazy it was and what we lived through. And congratulations if you're listening to this episode because you lived through it. You probably lived through it with us. So let's get started right now with part one of the best, if there's such a thing, of COVID.
CBS 2 has learned that an army of NYPD officers will fan out across the city this weekend to make sure that people are wearing masks and maintaining social distance. CBS 2's Marcia Kramer has this exclusive story.
You might say it's no more Mr. Nice Guy. The NYPD will be out in force at parks, beaches, and playgrounds this weekend to make sure New Yorkers don't get up close and personal with each other, that everyone observes social distancing.
We're past the point of warnings. This is a dangerous situation.
NYPD Chief of Department Terrence Monahan telling me that New Yorkers drawn out of their homes by the expected sunny skies and warm temperatures this weekend will see a large police presence. 1,000 cops, all five boroughs, to keep New Yorkers safe by trying to stop the spread of COVID-19.
Barbecues with large gatherings of people together, organized sports events, people hanging together trying to drink or something along those lines. We will be breaking these up. We will be actively involved. People who are just walking together, exercising on a blanket with their family, those aren't people we're going to bother. They don't have a mask, we'll give them a mask.
Will you really arrest people?
If they confront us, if it becomes an incident, yes, we will. If it has to be, yes. I hope it never comes to that, though, Marcia. People should understand just how dangerous a virus this is.
We will shut you down. We will cite you. And if we need to, we will arrest you and we will take you to jail, period. There should be nothing unambiguous about that. Don't make us treat you like a criminal. But if you act like a criminal and you violate the law and you refuse to do what is necessary to save lives in the city in the middle of a pandemic, we will take you to jail, period.
Mayor Lightfoot facing criticism tonight after getting her hair done. A photo surfaced of the mayor with a hairdresser, but she appeared to ignore social distancing efforts, standing right next to them for the picture. When asked about that photo today, this is what the mayor had to say.
I'm the public face of this city. I'm on national media, and I'm out in the public eye. And, you know, I'm a person who I take my personal hygiene very seriously. As I said, I felt like I needed to have a haircut. I'm not able to do that myself, and so I got a haircut. You want to talk more about that?
Part of the criticism came from the fact that the mayor had called on people not to go out and get their hair done in one of her Stay Home, Save Lives PSA.
Necessary for new members to function properly in the society they are being inducted into are all imbued at this time. Repetition is typical, as its use helps hammer the spell home. The wearing of masks may be required. Masking has traditionally played an important role in rituals of this kind, enabling and hastening the suppression of ego to help facilitate a death of the old identity before the identification with and manifestation of a new one. Disguised under a mask and hidden away, the initiate is more easily able to transcend the self, pushed further toward that invisible line between the physical and spiritual realms.
And I'm sure you've seen in a number of polls, there's a huge difference between Democrats and Republicans over whether or not they think it's necessary to wear a mask in public. Do you have any sense as to why that would be?
No sense as to why that would be. That's the choice of the American public. It's the choice of the individual as to whether to wear a mask or not. But again, I'd praise the extraordinary work of this administration in distributing those masks and ensuring healthcare providers get them.
The idea of shutting everybody down is a new idea that was developed in the 2006 Bush administration provisional plan on pandemics based on a high school student's science project. So the idea that this is the way to go, shutting everything down, is not true. It's not scientifically true. It may be superior, but we don't know yet. So it may just be that when we go back to masks and social distancing in the world, there will be no uptick in the cases. So this idea of a second wave may never happen. Now, we will have some upticks, some little outbreaks, but the idea will be to isolate and contain those outbreaks.
While this lockdown has been going on, I know from communications to me and Gaz and Jamie at davidicke.com, I know from all the postings on the internet, not just in Britain, but around the world in America, that while this lockdown has been going on, 5G masts are being rolled out at a very rapid rate. In the same period of this lockdown, something like another 21 towns and cities have been opened in Britain to 5G. 5G is being rolled out all over the world at a very great rate of knots.
This is a time where everything is supposed to be stopped.
Yeah.
And they're still building towers overnight.
Yes, because that's considered essential work.
Do you think that Dr. Fauci played a part in COVID-19 then? Do you think that he should be held accountable or responsible or criminally responsible for the corruption with COVID-19 or even tracing back as far as 30 plus years?
Oh, absolutely. He should be held criminally responsible all the way back to the spread of HIV/AIDS. Through the country. At the same time, he did the same thing he's doing now in COVID-19, that is prevent the use of therapies like hydroxychloroquine or low dose type 1 interferon alpha or any number of natural things, prevent people from doing the appropriate testing. The FDA didn't do the appropriate serology testing that would have shown that in fact the virus had been through this country earlier than thought, and we may have actually had in many places a natural herd immunity that isn't occurring with the lockdown, and that people aren't being prevented from you know, even if they were exposed, from getting the disease with prophylactic measures. That's preventative measures like hydroxychloroquine, and all the same time promoting drug use in research and clinical trials, which he's also doing a similar thing to what he did, what he directed to be done in the case of the XMRVs. That's fraudulent studies that show that a drug works when it really doesn't work, and how they manipulate the study design in order to drag it out. So and then, because we're not developing a natural herd immunity, the amount of disease and death that's being caused while he's promoting measures that not only don't work, but have caused literally the devastation of our economy, and we won't even be able to count the number of deaths from people who couldn't get adequate care for things like cancer and cardiovascular disease, just simple care for things that have nothing to do with COVID-19.
As we come on the air tonight, coronavirus infections are still growing in much of the country. Just as we're learning, there is now a more powerful mutant strain of the virus that is even more difficult to treat. There are now more than 20,000 new confirmed cases every day here in the United States. And while cases are declining in the New York City area, the epicenter of the crisis, elsewhere, the rate of infection is rising. Still, 44 states are moving forward with lifting restrictions. And tonight, President Trump is acknowledging those moves to reopen could lead to even more deaths, telling reporters today that Americans should, quote, think of themselves as warriors.
COVID-19 remains a threat, but there's a drive to get out, to get back to normal. Well, AHS says there's now an app that could help.
Providing this information voluntarily is crucial to our work to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Alberta Trace Together is the first contact tracing app available in North America. Every time users pass one another, their phones record the encounter using Bluetooth. Encrypted data will be stored on the phone. Now, if one of those users tests positive for COVID-19, the user can upload their interactions to AHS, and a contact tracer would call the numbers the phone registered, telling them to self-isolate.
Like bringing a camera into focus, these techniques give us a far clearer picture that help us to inform our actions going forward.
Now, the app stores only phone numbers, no locations. It doesn't use GPS, but tracking still raises privacy questions. Alberta's privacy commissioner says she has been involved and she supports enhanced contact tracing. In a statement, she adds, "In my view, Alberta Health has chosen a less intrusive approach in deploying this app."
President Trump is lashing out against a new advertisement by a Republican-led group called the Lincoln Project, calling out his mismanagement of the coronavirus pandemic. The one-minute ad is titled "Morning in America," spin on Ronald Reagan's 1984 campaign slogan.
There's morning in America, and under the leadership of Donald Trump, our country is weaker and sicker and poorer. And now, Americans are asking, if we have another 4 years like this, will there even be an America?
That morning in America ad spelled M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. In a series of angry tweets posted just after midnight Tuesday morning, Trump attacked the makers of the ad, singling out George Conway, longtime Trump critic, husband of White House counselor Kellyanne Conway. Trump tweeted, quote, "I don't know what Kellyanne did to her deranged loser of a husband, Moonface, but it must have been really bad," Trump tweeted.
CBS's Mola Lenghi is going to lead us off tonight in New York City. Mola?
Well, Nora, while deaths in New York are down significantly from their peak just a few weeks ago, we're still losing more than 200 people a day to this virus. So many that bodies are being stored in makeshift morgues, like those white refrigerator trucks that you see behind me there. And that is why there is so much hope in this experimental new vaccine that could be ready by this fall.
Well, we certainly hope so. I want to put up a quote from Governor Cuomo in New York, which sort of had some surprising information in it. He said 66% of the people who were in new cases were at home, which is shocking to us. He said, "This is a surprise. Overwhelmingly, the people were at home. We thought maybe they were taking public transportation and we've taken special precautions. But actually, no, these people were literally at home. 66% of the new cases. How does that happen?"
Well, generally speaking, patients report, and this has been well established, better and safer behaviors than reality. So people report that they may be staying at home. But in fact, we know 600 people got the infection during pretty harsh sheltering conditions in the New York area. How did that happen? That means they got the infection during the extreme measures. So we know the drivers of this infection. We know what they are. They're mass gatherings, they're travel, they're people working in confined areas. They're people with direct contact. And we know that 20% of those admissions to the hospital were in nursing homes. We're seeing now in meatpacking areas, those that work in confined areas, especially with high-risk individuals. That is one of our major battles, is dealing with the outbreaks in these challenged areas.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you again soon. Dr. Marta McCarry, thank you very much. Good to have you here tonight.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
You're sure of it? Because people are listening really closely to this.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet. But it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is. And often, there are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask, and they keep touching their face.
And can you get some schmutz sort of staying inside there?
Of course. But when you think masks, you should think of healthcare providers needing them and people who are ill.
And a 56-foot billboard called the Trump Death Clock has been unveiled in Times Square here in New York. The billboard was created by the Oscar-nominated filmmaker Eugene Jarecki.
So the Trump Death Clock is a billboard that hangs over Times Square, and what it shows is an estimate of the number of U.S. COVID-19 deaths that resulted from the president and his team's failed response to the coronavirus outbreak. Thanks to Dr. Fauci and leading epidemiologists, we now know that had the mitigation guidelines been put into effect just 1 week earlier, on March 9th instead of March 16th, 60% of U.S. COVID-19 deaths would have been prevented. That's an incredible number, and on behalf of all those who needlessly lost their lives to this failed leadership in a pandemic, we need a symbol that cries out not only for accountability, but also for more responsible and responsive stewardship going forward.
At the time of this broadcast, the Trump death clock stands at 46,485 and growing.
This is the New York City Police Department. Non-essential gatherings of any kind have been prohibited by the governor and the mayor. This gathering is unlawful, and you are ordered to disperse. If you fail to disperse immediately, you are subject to arrest.
In my lifetime, this will be the greatest economic hit. But you don't have a choice. People act like you have a choice. People don't feel like going to the stadium when they might get infected. You know, it's not the government who's saying, okay, just ignore this disease and, you know, people are deeply affected by seeing these deaths, by knowing they could be part of the transmission chain, and you know, old people, their parents, their grandparents could be affected by this. And so you don't get to say, ignore what's going on here. There will be the ability, particularly in rich countries, to open up if things are done well over the next few months. But for the world at large, normalcy only returns when we've largely vaccinated the entire global population. And so, you know, although there's a lot of work on testing, a lot of work on drugs that we're involved with, you know, trying to achieve that ambitious goal, which has never been done for the vaccine, that rises to the top of the list.
All right. What do we got here? We've got, look at this. Look closely at this. That's a restaurant that's using mannequins to fill out the half-empty dining room. What's the story behind this one, Ash?
This is the Inn at Little Washington in Washington, Virginia. It's no ordinary restaurant. It's a Michelin 3-star restaurant. It's to get a table here, it is very coveted. So rather than leave them open, the owners of the restaurant said, let's put in the mannequins. Very well dressed, I may add. 3-piece suits, ties, hats, nice dresses for the ladies, even if the company is a little lifeless. But by the way, the tasting menu tasting menu is $248. So I hope you get more than fried chicken and fish and chips.
Yeah, I want a mannequin. That's what I want.
Yeah.
On Capitol Hill, House Democratic leaders have unveiled a massive 1,800-page coronavirus relief package worth $3 trillion. The so-called HEROES Act would fund expanded unemployment benefits through January 2021, send most U.S. adults another one-time $1,200 stimulus check, and provide $1 trillion in assistance to hard-hit state, local, and tribal governments. It would also expand SNAP food benefits, fund hazard pay for frontline workers, increase funding for COVID-19 testing, and provide $25 billion in funding to the U.S. Postal Service. The bill would not expand Medicare to cover millions of newly uninsured Americans, nor does it provide for rent and mortgage relief or recurring cash payments to U.S. households. The bill would expand the Paycheck Protection Program to bail out corporate lobbyist firms. Climate activists say the bill also fails to close loopholes for big polluters. Greenpeace USA tweeted, quote, fossil fuel CEOs will be rejoicing that Congress has once again left the door wide open for handouts to struggling, mismanaged oil and gas corporations.
But you agree that stimulus should move forward? There's been some Republicans who suggest that
I don't know. It depends. It's certainly not the package that I saw today. Basically, if you look at that package, what they want more than anything else is it's a voting package. They want to be able to make sure that Republicans can't win an election by putting in all sorts of mailing ballots. Now, that's the problem with mail-in ballots. Are they going to dump a whole pile of ballots on your desk just before the election? So the problem with the mail-in ballots, it's subject to tremendous corruption, cheating. And so I'm against it. And if you look at the bill that Nancy Pelosi is putting in, has a lot to do with elections, and we're not going to lose elections because of that.
Tonight, the FBI and federal cybersecurity agents are warning that hackers linked to the Chinese government are trying to steal research on coronavirus vaccines and therapies. The FBI says the potential theft could jeopardize the treatment of patients here in the U.S. Here's CBS Chief Justice and Homeland Security Correspondent Jeff Begays.
While the coronavirus was sweeping across parts of China in January, U.S. officials say Chinese hackers were already focused on the United States, trying to steal research from universities and pharmaceutical companies that were working on a cure. John Demers is the Assistant Attorney General for National Security.
The Chinese for years have targeted biomedical research, and there's nothing more important than COVID-19 research right now in that field.
The hacking charges ratcheted up tensions over the virus between the U.S. and China.
It should have been stopped at the source, which was China.
But it's not just China. Iran is also on the attack. Researchers at the cybersecurity company Recorded Future say the Iranian state targeted an executive at Gilead Sciences, the manufacturer of the promising coronavirus treatment drug remdesivir. But Demers said China is desperate to be first with the vaccine.
You call this a holy grail of information that these foreign hackers are going after?
There's nothing more important right now than these treatments. And perhaps most significantly for China, for geopolitical value, to be able to say that they were the first to develop a vaccine.
Tonight in a statement, Chinese officials said the accusations were without evidence. But U.S. officials say anyone working on a vaccine should be on hyper alert. Margaret.
Problem. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Said many times that the U.S. is doing far better than any other country when it comes to testing.
Yes.
Why does that matter? Why is this a global competition to you if every day Americans are still losing their lives and we're still seeing more cases every day?
Well, they're losing their lives everywhere in the world. And maybe that's a question you should ask China. Don't ask me, ask China that question, okay? When you ask them that question, you may get a very unusual answer. Yes, behind you, please.
Sir, why are you saying that to me specifically?
I'm telling you, I'm not saying it specifically to anybody. I'm saying it to anybody that would ask a nasty question
like that.
That's
not a nasty question.
Please go ahead.
Why does it matter?
Okay, anybody else? Please, go ahead in the back, please.
I have two questions.
No, it's okay.
But you pointed to me. I have two questions, Mr.
Next.
President.
Next, please.
But you did. You called on me.
I did, and you didn't respond, and now I'm calling on.
Sorry, I just
the young lady in the back, please.
I just wanted to let my colleague finish, okay. But can I ask you
ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
There's an approach called the RNA vaccine that people like Moderna, CureVac, and others are using that in 2015, we'd identified that as very promising for pandemics and for other applications as well. And so if everything goes perfectly with the RNA approach, we could actually beat the 18 months. We don't want to create unrealistic expectations. The efficacy of vaccines in older people is always a huge challenge. You know, it turns out the flu vaccine isn't that effective in elderly people. Most of the benefit comes from younger people not spreading it because they're vaccinated, and that benefits on a community basis the elderly. Here, we clearly need a vaccine that works in the upper age range because they're most at risk of that. And doing that so that you amp it up so it works in older people and yet you don't have side effects, you know, if we have, you know, 1 in 10,000 side effects, that's, you know, way more, 700,000, you know, people who will suffer from that. So really understanding the safety at gigantic scale across all age ranges, you know, pregnant, male, female, undernourished, existing comorbidities, it's very, very hard. And that actual decision of, okay, let's go and give this vaccine to the entire world, governments will have to be involved because there will be some risk and indemnification needed before that can be decided on.
Taking on coronavirus in hard-hit communities of color. Join Don Lemon and Van Jones with Dr. Regina Benjamin and Robert Smith. Plus, messages of hope from Mario Lopez, Samuel L. Jackson, and more. The Color of COVID, live tomorrow at 10 on CNN.
And now on to the frauds. Let's start with Pennsylvania Health Secretary Rachel Levine, who weeks ago ordered nursing homes to admit COVID-positive patients. Well, while thousands of residents saw their loved ones and family members die, Levine quietly extracted her own mother out of harm's way, reportedly moving her from a nursing home to a hotel.
My mother requested, and my sister and I, as her children, complied to move her to another location during the COVID-19 outbreak. My mother is 95 years old. She is very intelligent and more than competent to make her own decision.
I'd rather have her mother be Health Secretary of Pennsylvania, frankly.
Do you mean a fully approved vaccine for everyone, the full public, or a partially approved vaccine with emergency use?
No, we're looking for a full vaccine for everyone that wants to get it. Not everybody's going to want to get it. But we're looking at a full vaccine. Is that a correct statement?
Yeah, we'll. So the answer is yes. We're working for a fully approved vaccine, but we'll also use the tools we have, for instance, emergency use authorization as appropriate. We use all of our regulatory tools to bring vaccine available for the entire American population by January.
Okay, and then Mr. President, could you just clarify, why are some of you wearing a mask and why are some of you not wearing a mask?
We've all been tested, I've been tested, we've all been tested, and we're quite a distance away and we're outdoors, so I told them, I gave them the option, they could wear it or not. So you can blame it on me, but I gave them the option, we could wear it or not.
President, and he said it again today, we need to move ahead, whether we're ready or not in the direction of opening up.
Yes, he did, Judy, and the president proves once again, he's not actually strategic or tactical in his political fights that he engages in. He's visceral, he's instinctive. You should always, if you're going after somebody politically, go after somebody who's a lot weaker than you are politically or less popular. I mean, Democrats won 5 consecutive presidential elections running against Herbert Hoover because he was there in the Depression and unpopular as a Republican president. But he picked Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci. David mentioned he'd been there since the Reagan years. But not only that, when in a presidential debate, when George H.W. Bush was asked to cite a contemporary American hero, he cited Dr. Anthony Fauci.
The Food and Drug Administration halted a coronavirus testing program promoted by billionaire Bill Gates and Seattle health officials pending reviews. The program sought to send test kits to the home of people both healthy and sick to try to bring the country to the level of testing officials say is necessary before states can begin safely reopening. The program, which has already gone through thousands of tests, found dozens of cases that had previously been undiagnosed. The Seattle Coronavirus Assessment Network said on its website that the FDA has asked it to pause testing while it receives additional authorizations, but maintained its procedures are safe.
Every player, unless they're from the same household, has to bring their own tennis balls so that you don't touch other people's tennis balls with your hands. You can kick their balls, but you can't touch them. I'm going to blush, sorry. Of course, if you're playing with someone in your household, you can touch those tennis balls. To avoid confusion between whose balls are whose, you can use a marker, like a Sharpie, to mark out, to put an X or put someone's initials on that.
The P4 lab at the Wuhan Institute of Virology has come under scrutiny as a potential source of the virus. According to an NBC report, a hazardous event may have happened at the lab in October last year. Three people familiar with the matter told NBC that U.S. intelligence agencies are reviewing an unofficial report on cell phone location data. The report found there was no cell phone activity around the high security part of the P4 lab between October 7th and 24th last year. The report suggests there may have been a hazardous event there sometime between October 6th and 11th that required the lab to be closed during that time. The report talks about images from October 14th to 19th last year showing no outbound traffic from the lab. It's suspected a roadblock was set up to prevent cars and people coming and going. This is in contrast to satellite images from August to October 6th, which show a lot of activity. The next instance of activity was on October 25th. U.S. Senator Tom Cotton also spoke about the data in an interview with Fox News. Cotton said normally thousands of mobile phones are in use around this area. Wuhan has about the same population density as New York. He adds the sudden drop in cell phone usage is likely an indicator of when the virus first began spreading. He said we could get to the bottom of it a lot faster if the Chinese regime was more transparent. U.S. intelligence officials say the evidence is not enough on its own. They are still investigating.
I mean, there's a real possibility that the convention does not happen, or it happens in a virtual sense. Is that correct as of today?
Well, first of all, our convention has to happen because we are not officially nominating Joe Biden in order to take Donald Trump. So our convention is happening. There is business that has to happen. Now, when it comes to what our convention is going to look like, I can guarantee you that our convention will ensure that safety first, whether it is our delegates, the people of Milwaukee, or all of those involved in a convention, we will make sure that they are safe, whatever that looks like, and that they vote for our nominee.
With summer right around the corner, New Jersey announced this week that beaches would be open by Memorial Day weekend with some restrictions. The openings are weeks behind other coastal states like Georgia and Florida, but as one of the states hardest hit by the COVID-19 pandemic, local officials say they are proceeding cautiously. At exactly 10 a.m. yesterday, barriers that had been blocking the boardwalk and beach in Seaside Heights, New Jersey, were pushed aside. An announcement made it official.
These beaches are now officially open. Once again, these beaches are now officially open.
It's a sign that things are returning to normal in this quintessential Jersey Shore town, sort of.
We're looking to see how we do with the social distance, and that's going to be our test today.
Tony Voss is the mayor of Seaside Heights. After nearly 2 months of being closed because of COVID-19, visitors can now walk and ride bikes on the boardwalk, provided they heed the rule of 6 feet between groups of people. On the beach, there's no swimming or sunbathing, but the public can walk, fish, and even surf. Mayor Voss says it's just the first phase of Seaside Heights' reopening.
I'm optimistic that this is a good first step. Obviously, I would love to see everything open. I would love to see us swimming and so forth. But we have to recognize that we have to take this in steps.
Seaside Heights is one of more than three dozen communities along the Jersey Shore grappling with how best to reopen. In neighboring Seaside Park, beaches are already open to sunbathers, provided beachgoers keep their distance.
These are unprecedented times.
We know things are hard right now. You're stuck inside with nothing to do.
You might be going out of your mind.
Just wanting to do something.
Anything.
But now, more than ever.
More than ever.
More than ever.
It's time to think about how your choices affect others.
So please, please.
Please.
Don't start a podcast.
Just don't do it.
Don't do it.
You might feel like it's a productive use of your time right now.
You've probably already got a USB mic and a spare room ready to go.
And your mate Dave's got some interesting opinions.
But we're here to tell you.
He doesn't.
He really doesn't.
He's a fuckwit.
We don't need your true crime exclusive, which is just you reading Wikipedia articles to your housemate.
We don't need your minute-by-minute breakdown of every episode of Parks and Rec.
What are you going to do? Send everyone in your contact list a MailChimp newsletter?
And force them to mark you as spam instead of unsubscribing?
Because they're scared to hurt your feelings?
We're in the middle of a pandemic!
Look, it's pretty straightforward.
Just don't start a podcast.
Make some pasta from scratch like everyone else and just shut up.
The greatest gift you can give your fellow human beings right now?
Right now?
Right now is to shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up.
Come on.
Do it.
Don't start a podcast.
What's your reaction to the president saying that he is now taking hydroxychloroquine? Are you concerned?
Well, first let me say how happy I am about your new baby, how lovely, Wyatt, how perfectly named. We all know why that is, and congratulations. And as you now are a father, you see how important it is to keep the world safe for the children, for the children. As far as the president is concerned, he's our president, and I would rather he not be taking something that has not been approved by the scientist, especially in his age group and in his, shall we say, weight group, what is morbidly obese, they say. So I think it's not a good idea.
Does this make medical sense?
Yes. Listen, people have got to separate politics from the practice of medicine. Everything he said was absolutely accurate. It has been around for 40 years. It's been prescribed hundreds of millions of times for malaria. I personally have prescribed it hundreds of times for malaria, hundreds of times for rheumatic diseases. I've never seen one adverse side effect. I can't say that of Tylenol. I can't say that of aspirin. Now, every medication has risk. That's just the way it is. But in a otherwise healthy person with maybe a rheumatic condition or to prevent malaria, it's a very safe medication. Do not confuse it with chloroquine. That's different than hydroxychloroquine.
Okay, so the
different medicines.
So the FDA put out a warning about both hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine. No. They said in this warning in April that it can cause a dangerous abnormality in heart rhythm and virus patients.
Chloroquine.
Said about both of them, and that not only in hospitals should it be used and in clinical trials. This is not being used in a hospital and not being used as a clinical trial.
Correct. That's the FDA standard. Doctors are entitled to do anything they want with a medication. They take on a certain degree of liability they do when they do that, different than when something is FDA approved. We use off-label medication all the time. Some of our more common prescribing is off-label, not FDA approved. Now, this is for not a hospital setting, not a COVID setting. It's being used for prophylaxis. Doctors take it themselves for prophylaxis. They prescribe it for patients for prophylaxis.
But the FDA says that there's no evidence that works.
No, because that study's not been done yet. They're talking about the treatment of COVID.
Preventatively, there's no study that shows that works.
Correct.
The president is doing this to prevent, unless he's had coronavirus.
That is correct.
And he's lying about it.
Doctors can prescribe it prophylactically. I know many doctors are doing it. I know many doctors that are taking it themselves because there's some evidence that it might be prophylactic, and it is so safe. So they feel like rather than do nothing, they'd rather do the chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, not the chloroquine, which does have cardiac side effects. The studies on hydroxychloroquine and the cardiac effects have yet to be washed out.
Exploring the unintended consequences of a safety first culture through the lens of a quarantine was to me a really interesting rumination, because we can be a safety first country, but only for very, very, very short periods of time. And then we're reminded that the chief goal of living is not to merely stay alive, at least not for most people. And then this fascinating conversation starts to unfold. So that's a long way of saying that for the last 60 days or so, I've seen a lot of conversation right around a couple topics that I love, specifically homeostatic risk, compensatory risk, risk equilibrium, and all the subconscious things we do to maintain our own illusory relationship with the illusion of safety.
I mean, did you change your mind on herd immunity?
No.
What is your...
I don't know what you mean by that. Herd immunity is just a thing. Yeah, herd immunity or population immunity is what
But for a period in March, the government appeared to be pursuing a strategy of mitigating the spread of the virus, allowing Cheltenham races, for example, to go ahead between March the 10th and March the 13th, allowing it to spread naturally to allow the development of some herd immunity. Was that a mistake?
I don't know. I'm not quite sure whether that really was the strategy. I think that at the time it was difficult to imagine. We weren't sure what levels of compliance with various social distance measures were possible.
Was that why you didn't model full lockdown until the middle of March?
I think it was very hard. I don't think anybody looked at it. It wasn't just myself. I don't think anybody, we all looked at a range of different measures, some of which were very stringent, but it was, it's difficult to say, but it was difficult to imagine just how, well, in some sense, it's difficult to imagine just how easy the lockdown was, if you see what I mean.
To families who've suffered losses inside nursing homes, and they're looking for accountability and they'd like to see justice. For example, I've recently interviewed a family, three siblings. They've had two nursing home losses within a few weeks of one another on two separate floors in the same facility here in Albany. They felt so much solace when you got up and talked about Matilda's Law. They said, great, we're protected. Like, our loved ones are going to be okay because of Matilda's Law. And then their loved ones passed away because they couldn't get the testing. So they're looking for accountability and they feel that they were failed. What's the comment to that?
Yeah, the comment is this, and I have those conversations all day long with people who have lost people, right? We lost 139 people yesterday in hospitals. Who is accountable for those 139 deaths? Well, how do we get justice for those families who had 139 deaths? What is justice? Who can we prosecute for those deaths? Nobody. Nobody. Mother Nature, God, where did this virus come from? People are going to die by this virus. That is the truth. Older people, vulnerable people, are going to die from this virus. That is going to happen, despite whatever you do. Because with all our progress as a society, we can't keep everyone alive. Despite everything you do. And older people are more vulnerable. And that is a fact. And that is not going to change. And look, to me, the really difficult conversations for me are, my son was 40 years old. He was not a senior citizen, did not have a comorbidity, and got this virus because he was an essential worker and doing the right thing, and had an aneurysm. I thought young people were fine. And he was doing the right thing as an essential worker. You know, there's a randomness to this virus that is inexplicable.
Just everything we possibly can to make sure people have a good time, but it's safe.
Kelly Jones is a manager at the Palazzo Gentlemen's Club in South Austin.
He says their employees, along with dancers and entertainers in the industry, have had it tough.
A lot of people I know that are entertainers are actually independent contractors, much like hairdressers. So they had a lot of issues collecting unemployment. They work on cash tips, like a lot of other people in the service industry. So they're struggling as well. A lot of them have families and kids. They're trying to make sure that they have arrangements for childcare, for putting food on the table.
And now they'll be back to work Friday, but with a long list of safety protocols in effect. That includes how many people can get into this building, which normally holds close to 300 people.
We're going to have to cut that down to comply with the governor's order of 25% capacity. Going to be back to the old days with hand clickers, making sure what our capacity is. We're going to have barriers around our stages so that our customers have social distancing from the entertainers. As far as private dances go, they're going to have to maintain that 6-foot division between them.
But of course, there are also a bar and serve food.
We're going to have to go to plasticware instead of nice metal knives and forks, paper napkins, placemats, plastic cups. Bartenders and our staff are going to make sure that we follow hand washing policies. Our employees definitely are wearing masks,
including the entertainers.
So we're encouraging them to be creative, find something they like that maybe goes with their outfits.
And they'll also have employees specifically designated for constantly cleaning the place. And while it won't be a full house inside by any means, they're just glad to get business moving again.
Aside from the fact that most believe that this president has botched this crisis from the get-go, and this will be known in history worldwide as a human catastrophe that he could have prevented, and he's trying to deflect at all times. And Willie and Mike, he's tweeting again all sorts of crazy things. Once again, tweeting conspiracy theories about Joe, falsely accusing him of murder, talking about the death of a young staffer in his congressional office years ago, and calling him dangerous to walk the streets. And I'll just say, I'll take a point of personal privilege here. That's sick. Donald, you're a sick person. You're a sick person to put this family through this. To put her husband through this, to do this just because you're mad at Joe, because Joe got you again today, because he speaks the truth and he speaks plainly about your lack of interest and empathy in others and your lack of ability to handle this massive human catastrophe, the fact that you've made it worse and that you make it worse every day and that you won't even wear a mask to protect people from your germs. But the germs you're spreading on Twitter, first of all, Twitter, you shouldn't be allowing this. And you should be taking these tweets down. And you should be ashamed of yourself. You'll be hearing from me on this, because this is BS. But Donald, you're a sick person. You're really a cruel, sick, disgusting person. And you can keep tweeting about Joe, but you're just hurting other people. And of course, you're hurting yourself. Willie, why don't you take final thoughts? I'm done.
A professor at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland has been arrested over his alleged financial ties to China. This just days after the FBI sounded the alarm on China's attempts to steal coronavirus research. A professor at the University of Arkansas was arrested on similar charges last week. And then in January, Harvard's chemistry chief was charged with failing to disclose that he, too, was being paid by the Chinese Communist Party. 2 weeks ago, Senator Tom Cotton told us that the CCP was trying in many ways to steal medical data from the United States to try and come up with a vaccine for COVID-19 before the United States.
After several weeks of being stuck inside, thousands have flocked here to Bolivar Peninsula to make the most of their time while out.
Been in quarantine and like I need to get out and party.
Go topless Jeep weekend.
What's better than beach and a few drinks and Jeeps? Man, can't get any better than that.
In full swing at beaches on Bolivar Peninsula. This event comes at a time where beaches across the state are reopening following the coronavirus pandemic. And beachgoers like Chelsea Collier are still taking precautions to stay safe.
Wash them hands for 20 seconds and keep them clean with their Germ-X. Totally.
Come down, have a good time. You have a good time? There's no issues. But when you start acting silly, like the sheriff said on the previous interview, we've got a jail that's got a whole lot of empty holes.
The sheriff's office have made at least 63 arrests so far in connection to Jeep Weekend. As for the enforcement of social distancing, they say it's challenging to enforce.
I mean, you can't. It's just, it's not possible to do that on this beach with the amount of people that we have here. It's just, we can't do that.
The additional presence of law enforcement has been a welcoming sight for beachgoers, given the history of this event.
May 5th, we announced a wear a mask in public campaign. and we asked people to submit videos that, and we would pick the winner by vote of the people, and the winner would become a public service announcement. We had over 600 submissions. Isn't that amazing? The competition is still open, and we're going to show you now five of the runner-ups.
United we stand, and divided we fall. We mask up not just to obey the law, but to obey the laws of nature. We hope for immunity in our community. We pray for normality in this calamity. We want hope. I mask up not because I fear getting sick, but because I fear getting you sick. I mask up because days, weeks, or months of hot breath and acne bumps is better than knowing my wife will soon have to raise a fatherless son. Mask up.
Senator, also, I think you know that this whole thing started in Wuhan, and you know that many people call this the Wuhan virus or the Chinese virus. Kamala Harris has had enough. She has a resolution that's going to work its way through the Senate to ban the phrase Wuhan virus, and she calls it anti-Asian. Your feeling on this?
Well, I object to that resolution, Brian. First off, Wuhan is just a city. It's not even a people. I guess she's going to have to call out Lyme disease for being anti-Connecticut, or maybe Legionnaire's disease for being anti-veteran Zika, since Zika is a forest in Africa. But this political correctness run amok covers a more serious point. The Democrats want to wave their arms and say that this is racist or xenophobic, and that's because they don't have an answer for China's rise and the threat that China poses to us. Joe Biden, as we said, has been weak on China for 30 years, so they want to have politically correct distractions to distract people from his terrible record on China. We can't let that happen.
Would requiring masks across the board help? Is that feasible?
Craig, I'm going to say this for the benefit of your family. I know you have young kids, for my family and for all Americans. We should make masks mandatory in public. Just like we ban indoor smoking, because you know what? You shouldn't have to breathe somebody else's secondhand smoke. I shouldn't have to breathe exhaled COVID-19 in somebody's breath. Nobody should. And so we should institute mandatory masks in public when you can't guarantee social distancing. That means retail stores. That means public transportation, workplaces. That's absolutely where we should be headed. Makes no sense why we're not already there. We're encouraging it. People are flouting the rules. A security guard at a retail outlet in Michigan died trying to encourage a customer to wear a mask. They shot him because they didn't like the way in which it was trying to be enforced, that policy. We need to not put the onus on security guards at local outlets to enforce this policy or to encourage Americans to abide by it. It's all in our best interest that we wear masks. The evidence is overwhelming. We just need governors to do their job.
The idea of a bioterrorist attack is kind of the nightmare scenario, because they're a pathogen with a high death rate would be picked. Now, the good news is, okay, I'm not trying to depress you, it's tough enough.
Too late.
Right now,
too
that
late.
Most of the work we're going to do to be ready for pandemic two, I call this pandemic one, most of the work we'll do to be ready for that are also the things we need to do to minimize the threat of bioterrorism.
You panicked about the market, panicked about COVID, panicked about the ventilators, panicked about the PPE, panicked about ever going out again, panicked
and
that
you
we ever
Joseph,
get back to normal.
Joseph, you didn't panic
what
about anything.
That? What good is it? Why
Joseph,
not? Why 100,000 not help
people died.
Keep their head. I understand
100,000
that.
People died, Joe, and all you did was try to help your friend, the president. That's what you did. Every single morning on this show. Every single morning
it
on this show, you abused and abused your position,
that's
Joe.
Totally unfair.
You abused and abused
I'm
your position.
I'm trying to help investors keep their cool, keep their heads. And as it turned out, that's what they should have done. That's what they should have done. They should have kept their heads. If they had listened to you, Andrew, we're supposed to be at about 8,000.
I wasn't arguing to go sell your stocks, Joseph. I was arguing about people's lives.
We understand.
People's
Andrew,
lives.
Andrew,
that's
it's a global
argument.
Pandemic.
Do the news. I'm begging you to do the news,
it's
Joseph.
It's a global pandemic.
I'm begging you.
Andy.
Please.
Greetings. My name is Dr. Tony Fauci, and I am here to present some good news at a time of great stress as we struggle to contain the COVID-19 outbreak. I'm excited about the opportunity to shine some light on one of the many young people who have stepped up and helped us throughout this difficult time. The 24th Annual Webby Awards will honor Avi Shiffman as the 2020 Person of the Year in recognition of his creation of ncov2019.live to track the spread of COVID-19 across the world. As we collectively navigate the severe impact of COVID-19, including the difficult but critical calls for nationwide social distancing, the internet has become the lifeblood of people looking for accurate information about the novel coronavirus and the necessary steps to combat it. Since launching the site on December 29th, Shiffman's tracking tool has been an invaluable resource that sounded the alarm on the virus and its spread, notably calling attention to its severity long before it was broadly recognized. At a time when the spread of misinformation can be so detrimental to our efforts, the site has provided over 600 million visitors with accurate real-time data. Shiffman has helped people around the globe understand COVID-19 and the necessity to upgrade current healthcare systems and the importance of measures to flatten the curve. For having the foresight to track the global spread of COVID-19 and for creating an essential website to provide real-time data about the virus to people everywhere, it is my great privilege to honor Avi Shiffman as the 2020 Webby Person of the Year. The
president will sign an executive order concerning social media as he escalates his feud with Twitter. Here's Peter Alexander.
Ahead of today's scrubbed launch, President Trump touring NASA's campus, striking an uplifting note.
It's a great achievement for our country, and our country's number one.
Members of the president's family traveling with him wearing masks. The first lady earlier seen wearing her mask aboard Marine One. Their visit coming the very day the country marks that tragic milestone, 100,000 lives lost to the coronavirus. And today the president hosted New York Governor Andrew Cuomo at the White House.
It was about how do we supercharge the reopening, especially in New York, which has been hardest hit.
No drama there, but the president is escalating another battle with Twitter after the company, for the first time, posted fact-check labels on a pair of the president's tweets about mail-in ballots. President Trump accusing Twitter of interfering in the 2020 presidential election and today threatening to strongly regulate or close them down. A president has no authority to shut down a private company, and the First Amendment limits the government's ability to regulate free speech. Meantime, some top Republicans are telling President Trump to knock it off as he again today pushed a debunked conspiracy theory that former Republican congressman and Morning Joe host Joe Scarborough had something to do with the death of an aide in 2001. Lori Klisutis died after an abnormal heart rhythm caused her to collapse and hit her head in Scarborough's Florida office. Scarborough was in Washington at the time. Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney.
We're in the middle of a pandemic. He's the commander-in-chief of this nation, it's causing great pain to the family of the young woman who died.
As for SpaceX, late tonight, the president tweeted that he plans to fly back to Florida on Saturday for the next scheduled launch. Lester?
Millions of Americans staying at home are relying on Amazon.
Millions of Americans staying at home are relying on Amazon.
Millions of Americans staying at home are relying on Amazon.
Millions of Americans staying at home are relying on Amazon.
Amazon has transformed its operations in response to COVID-19 to protect employees and keep packages flowing.
Amazon has transformed its operations in response to COVID-19 to protect employees and keep packages flowing.
The company is keeping its employees safe and healthy while still delivering those packages to your doorstep.
The company is keeping employees safe and healthy.
The company is keeping its employees safe and healthy.
The company is keeping its employees safe and healthy.
The company is keeping its employees safe and healthy.
The company is keeping its employees safe and healthy.
The company is keeping its employees safe and healthy.
The company is keeping its employees safe and healthy.
It spent $800 million on increased wages and overtime pay during the pandemic.
It has spent $800 million on increased wages and overtime pay during the pandemic.
It has spent $800 million on increased wages and overtime pay during the pandemic.
It has spent $800 million on increased wages and overtime pay during the pandemic.
Amazon says it has spent $800 million on increased wages and overtime pay during the pandemic.
Every single one of Amazon's workforce of nearly a million people has played a critical role in making these changes happen.
I hope that they feel that passion that we have for safety.
So they can stay safe and healthy while you do too.
Look, the president today, you know, with these retweets, one, so many viewpoints he comments, with a columnist saying that this is about social control as opposed to medical reality. Another one equating masks to silence, slavery, and social death. Obviously, this is shocking. I mean, and completely false when it comes to so many viewpoints.
Yeah, the piece that the president retweeted could have been written by a Russian bot. It's essentially disinformation. The irrefutable concept is that universal masking, having the entire country wear a mask in public, would have dramatically reduced the death rate in this country. It's not up for debate. It's just science. But the president has an irreconcilable conflict of interest. And the conflict of interest is this. He's running for president during a pandemic. And some of the things that one would need to do to suppress the pandemic run counter to his election chances. Right? He needs to make things look like the country is returning to normal. And wearing a mask is decidedly abnormal, but it saves lives. So he not only does he not promote universal mask wearing, he then promotes essentially negative comments about it. It's maddening. You know, I've lost family members to COVID. You know, my colleagues at work have lost family members. And pretty soon, everyone in this country is going to know somebody who has lost somebody to this virus. And to think that the President of the United States would not promote the simple public health measure of wearing masks is insane.
I mean, Andrew Cuomo has been glorified by media despite policies with respect to nursing homes that caused to a number of tragic deaths, whereas Ron DeSantis has instituted pretty successful policy if you look at their numbers. So what's going on here?
Ron DeSantis is not doing what he needed to do 2 weeks ago to protect Florida seniors.
It's been a remarkable show of leadership by Governor Cuomo in recent days. He's providing hope.
And Governor Ron DeSantis is finally, maybe too little too late, issuing a stay-at-home order.
Cuomo has become a kind of acting president.
Governor DeSantis should have absolutely acted a lot quicker, not only for the retired people.
Cuomo, everything Trump isn't, honest, direct, brave.
In the case of Governor DeSantis of Florida, he's going exactly the opposite way from what the experts, the people on the front lines, indicate ought to be done.
Governor Cuomo has become a national leader and not just the leader of New York. No stay-at-home order from Governor Ron DeSantis. Why bother, right? I'm sure Florida will be fine.
He is conveying incredible strength in the face of this pandemic.
Act like you give a damn.
I've seen you referred to a little bit recently as the love gov, and I'm wondering if that's bleeding into your demeanor at all.
Massive crowds swarming cities across the country are choosing social justice over social distancing.
I could be dead tomorrow if I walk on the streets.
But an urgent health warning from officials.
There's no question there's a danger this could intensify the spread of the coronavirus just at a point when we were starting to beat it back profoundly.
How many super spreaders were in that crowd? How many young people went home and kissed their mother hello or shook hands with their father?
But these demonstrators see an America infected with injustice too.
Are you worried about your safety?
Yes, but the answer is that I'm worried about my safety to both of those viruses.
Late today, the first comprehensive study on stopping the virus found physical distancing, 3 feet or more, is most important, even more than wearing a mask. And with tear gas flying, the risks even greater.
Tear gas makes people cough, sneeze, their eyes water, and when that happens, the respiratory droplets that carry the virus can travel further, meaning they can infect a lot more people.
Public health and prosperity now jeopardized. This restaurant owner's reopening was put on hold.
I worked for 2 months every day to reposition ourselves for this to happen. It's disturbing.
In South Florida, businesses were expecting to see Miami Beach reopen today. That's now been postponed because of the protests, as officials everywhere wait to see if cases of the virus surge in the next 2 weeks.
I can't tell you how many people have been in touch with me today and tonight and last night to say some form of the following, which we would have laughed at 5 years ago. The Russians must be having a good old time looking at television images of the United States. death toll of 100,000, a pandemic not at all under control, and now city streets aflame in more cities tonight than we can list.
Yeah, I've lost count of the number of times you and I, Brian, have talked about this very concept that the number one goal of the Russian government is not to get a certain person in the White House, but rather to sow discord and chaos. Now, it helps if the person in the White House is unable to calm the nerves of the nation, is unable to get peace and calm restored in our cities through his behavior, through trust, through his relationships and his statements. So yes, our adversaries are studying this right now. Some of them are actually pleased that we are more divided than ever. And I'm very troubled that we could be in for a very long, hot summer if this isn't quashed.
April Williams is a professor of communications and media at the University of Michigan. And she says the Karen meme resurged with a vengeance last month.
A woman named Karen was denying that COVID-19 was real, became ill, and unfortunately she passed away. And one of the things that I'm seeing is people saying, look, this is peak Karen behavior.
It seems so wasteful, but some American dairy farmers are dumping milk, like the 56,000 pounds produced by farm owner Mark Muller in Northeast Wisconsin.
You put all that labor and work into the milk, and you hate to see it go down the drain when you know that there's people starving in the world and in our country even. We hate to throw things away.
Despite strong demand for milk as consumers stay home amid the coronavirus pandemic, dairy cooperatives that oversee marketing and shipping logistics are asking some farmers to dump milk. Supply chain disruptions due to the outbreak are preventing farmers from getting their products to the markets. With schools and restaurants closed, milk processors have to shift to selling to retail grocers instead of wholesalers. That creates logistical and packaging challenges. What's more, trucking companies are scrambling for drivers as some who fear the virus have stopped working. Overseas dairy markets have dried up, and it doesn't help that milk is highly perishable. Some farmers say they will be paid for the milk they dump, but payments for all co-op members will take a hit from lost revenues.
Today is a day of good news. We have one of the lowest hospitalization rates since this began, and really good news, we have the lowest death rate. It's down to 35. I've been asking all the experts who will talk to me, what is the lowest that number can go? And when it gets this low, it's really a question of how what they're attributing as the cause of death. In other words, you have people who are gravely ill, who are going to die of something. And if they get the COVID virus, they attribute it to the COVID virus. But there is a number, when it gets down this low, it's really a question of what that hospital certifies as a cause of death. So we'd like to see nobody die in the state of New York ever.
Where is the president in a time of national emergency? Hiding. Hiding in a security bunker, watching his shows, afraid, alone. Not a leader.
And supposing you brought the light inside the body.
Not a president, just a scared, incompetent.
Within a couple of days, it's going to be down to close to zero.
Embarrassment. You know that. Those who have worked with him know that.
The former Defense Secretary James Mattis accusing President Trump of being a threat to the Constitution.
Our allies know that. And our enemies know that. Everyone knows that. It's time for a competent president. Let's elect one.
Defending Democracy Together is responsible for the content of this advertising.
A vaccine, either by the end of this calendar year or in the first few months of 2021. So that's the thing that makes me feel confident that the process is really on track. And that's good news, again, in the context of never being able to guarantee success, things are clearly going in the right direction.
That's very promising, very promising indeed. And once there is a vaccine, how often do you think we would need it? Would it be like getting the flu shot every year?
You know, we don't know that right now. We're going to take it one step at a time. The first thing we want to do is to determine if it's safe and if it protects, how long that protection lasts. We're going to have to obviously observe that. And that's the reason why when you make a vaccine, it isn't the end of the game. You have to keep following and see how long the duration of the protection is. We hope it's substantial, but if it isn't, you could always give a boost. So right now, step one, let's just prove that it's safe and effective, and then we'll go on from there.
Right? So, okay. So people in the media, a lot of them are not very good at math, and they're very prone to groupthink, as they as the cannabis thing taught me. But there's something even worse than that, right? And people call it Trump derangement syndrome. I don't like to call it that because that, to me, suggests there aren't good reasons to be mad at Trump. I call it orange man bad, right? Because that puts you in on the joke a little bit, right? That, you know, Donald Trump does have lots of issues, but there's orange man bad syndrome going on. And Donald Trump got blamed for this early on. And, you know, he didn't, the government didn't prepare, right? He shut the borders, but then the government didn't really prepare in February and early March, and then it panicked. But what people realized in the media, consciously or not, was they could beat him up with this. They could beat him over the head with it because his normal style is to bluster and to bluff and to mock people. And that does not work when they're, when, you know, when you have these death counts every day.
Right.
So they realized they could embarrass him, and they have been doing it nonstop ever since. But the flip side of embarrassing him means you have to constantly talk about how terrible this is.
Now, I mean, that's quite, you know, that's quite a charge. I mean, what makes you think they really want them to get COVID? Because
it, money. I think it's at least $29,000 per patient. And then you have to think you're also charging supplies and more supplies and more supplies. That's just like a bonus money.
But what the residents aren't getting that, right? I mean, why?
Oh, that's the thing. And I actually had a, I've went at it with a lot of residents already, and they're order followers.
You talk about psychological warfare. Psychological warfare isn't just lying to you. It's not just propaganda as we would normally think of it. Psychological warfare is changing the way you interpret information so that you and I could be looking at the exact same set of data and we would come to wildly different conclusions on it. So for example, with this virus right now, this pandemic, you're looking at the Chinese regime's handling of the virus. We're looking at the exact same data. Now, do you interpret it as being a sign, oh, the Chinese regime did all it could in its power. It took very strong measures to ensure that the virus didn't spread and the rest of the world is just being unfair to it? Or do you think the Chinese regime lied to the world? The Chinese regime, you know, arrested doctors, disappeared journalists, and these types of things. If you were following only the information the CCP was releasing and some of the organizations that support the CCP, what they were saying, you would view it in line of the CCP's, you know, pro-CCP viewpoint. If you were following all the real data, for example, their cover-ups, their lying to the world, their, you know, manipulation of data and numbers, you would understand, okay, they were misleading the world, they were very dishonest about it, and no, absolutely, they did not handle it well. The idea that they handled it well, you would only believe that if you believed all of the lies they were telling the world, most of which have been exposed.
All right, well, let's get into it. Vina, what has you fired up this week?
Well, I've been following this J.K. Rowling controversy, and it all started with a tweet she made. Actually, it started with this headline, creating a more equal post-COVID-19 world for people who menstruate. J.K. took issue with the word people being used. Maybe she was trying to be funny, but she hinted that the publication should have stuck with using the word women. Some fans pointed out that there are lots of those who menstruate who don't identify as women. And then things got a little messy. Lots of tweets back and forth, and at one point, J.K. fired back with, "My life has been shaped by being female, and I don't think it's hateful to say so."
It's 2020. Releasing these kind of statements online is not a good look. And hasn't she been accused of transphobic stuff in the past?
Yeah. Last year, she was criticized for supporting a woman who was fired after saying that trans women weren't real women.
Sis, read the room. There are so many conversations right now about equality, justice, and racism. Is it any surprise that this story is blowing up right now?
Exactly. It's Pride Month, too. And this week, Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter himself, reacted with an essay advocating for trans lives. I thought he addressed the whole thing really well, and I liked how he expressed his hopes that people don't lose their love for the books themselves or forget the valuable lessons that they learned from them.
I have not read the books. I have not seen the movies. Don't come at me.
Okay, Maya, get out of here. What?
Well, I did watch the movies, and seeing Daniel advocate for what he believes in is so inspiring. And also, I loved how he signed his letter as Dan. Definitely had a big major glow up.
Only you would notice such a small detail, Sean. Do we think this will have a long-lasting impact on her career?
I think that this will diminish the amount of respect that J.K. Rowling has acquired over the years, but her writing is just so exceptional and renowned that I don't think the hype's ever going to die down.
What about a month or so, or two or three ago, when people were saying, you don't really need to wear a mask? Well, the reason for that is that we were concerned, the public health community, and many people were saying this, were concerned that it was at a time when personal protective equipment, including the N95 masks and the surgical masks, were in very short supply. And we wanted to make sure that the people, namely the healthcare workers, who were brave enough to put themselves in harm's way to take care of people who you know were infected with the coronavirus and the danger of them getting infected, we did not want them to be without the equipment that they needed. So there was not enthusiasm about going out and everybody buying a mask or getting a mask. We were afraid that that would deter away from the people who really needed it. Now we have masks. We know that you don't need an N95 if you're a person, ordinary person in the street. We also know that simple cloth coverings that many people have can work as well as a mask in many cases. So right now, unequivocally, the recommendation is when you're out there, particularly if you're in a situation where there's active infection, keep the distance physically and wear a mask. So although there appear to be some contradiction of you were saying this then and why you're saying this now, actually the circumstances have changed. That's the reason why.
The gentleman yields back. I want to announce that in accordance with what I said this morning, the attending physician of the House has said that it is imperative for the health and safety of people in this room that members wear masks. I would greatly prefer that all present simply uphold the decorum of the committee by complying with reasonable safety standards that are recommended by the attending physician and are respectful of all the occupants of this room. I have been greatly lenient today. However, I will tell you now that anyone who is not wearing a mask will not be recognized to speak, period. Who seeks recognition?
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Escobar was next.
Mr. Chairman, a point of parliamentary...
Ms. Escobar is recognized.
Clintock has tried repeatedly to make his point. Repeatedly.
Ms. Escobar has the time.
Mr. Chairman. No, it's our side. You just had a Democrat speak. It's our
Ms.
turn.
Ms. Escobar has the time. Ms. Escobar
no,
has
she
the
doesn't.
Ms. Escobar has the time.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Escobar has the time.
I think Mr. Liu just spoke. It's the Republicans' turn, and Mr. McClintock has tried now for several minutes to be recognized on a point of order.
There's no point of order, but who seeks recognition to speak?
Mr. Chairman, I seek recognition for a point of parliamentary inquiry.
The gentleman will state his point of parliamentary inquiry.
I would like the chairman to cite the House rule requiring members to wear masks in House proceedings. If we had such a vote, I don't recall it. If we have such a vote, I will vote against it, but I will be happy to abide by it if the House so decides. Until then, I would like you to cite me that rule since I obviously missed that vote.
The chair's authority to enforce the preservation of order and decorum during committee proceedings derives from the speaker's enforcement authority under Clause 2 of Rule 1.
And with testing, you know, testing is a double-edged sword. We've tested now 25 million people. It's probably 20 million people more than anybody else. Germany's done a lot. South Korea's done a lot. They called me, they said, the job you're doing, here's the bad part. When you test, when you do testing to that extent, you're gonna find more people, you're gonna find more cases. So I said to my people, slow the testing down, please. They test and they test. We got tests that people don't know what's going on. We got tests. We got another one over here. The young man's 10 years old. He's got the sniffles. He'll recover in about 15 minutes. That's a case. Add up to it. That's a case. That's a case.
Today I want to talk about a peculiar aspect of quantum measurements that you may have heard of. It's that the measurement does not merely reveal a property that previously existed, but that the act of measuring makes that property real. So when Donald Trump claims that not testing people for COVID means there will be fewer cases rather than just fewer cases you know about, then that demonstrates his deep knowledge of quantum mechanics.
Surges in cases of coronavirus are not linked to recent protests such as the Black Lives Matter, George Floyd, and police protests. Not even more people leaving their homes during the warm weather explains the surge of new coronavirus cases. This is according to findings of USA Today, an analysis of counties nationwide. For now, surges seem to be most intense in counties that had avoided the worst outbreaks earlier this year. The analysis found no single cause seems to explain why some places have seen spikes while others have not. The report cites one health expert as saying the virus is still out there and the strategy for fighting it has not changed.
And now,
will any White House officials be at the rally tomorrow?
There'll be several White House officials at the rally tomorrow.
Will those officials, or will you be there, for example?
I will be there.
Will you and other White House officials be wearing masks at the rally?
It's a personal choice. I won't be wearing a mask. I can't speak for my colleagues.
And why won't you wear a mask? Is it sort of a personal political statement? Is it because the president would be disappointed in you if you don't wear a mask?
It's a personal decision. I'm tested regularly. I feel that it's safe for me not to be wearing a mask, and I'm in compliance with CDC guidelines, which are recommended but not required.
This is not a mask. This is confidence.
It's for getting out and working anywhere other than home.
This is not a mask. This is solidarity.
It's for opening the door to a friend and keeping the doors open to your favorite places.
This is not a mask. This is a sign of love.
It was sold with plenty of promise.
That is Australia's ticket.
A ticket to freedom.
So we can get back to the things we love.
But so far, the $1.5 million app has hardly helped.
There haven't been new contacts identified through the use of the COVID app.
Victoria, New South Wales, South Australia and Tasmania yet to pick up a single close contact from the app who hadn't already been identified by contact tracers. And in Queensland and Western Australia, not one confirmed case had downloaded the app.
The COVID-19 app is not working as we hoped it would because too few people have downloaded it.
Other states say tracing has been easier because cases have been in hotel quarantine. But in Victoria, the virus is spreading in the community, and of the 568 cases confirmed since the app was launched, just over 30 had downloaded it.
It will help protect you. It will help protect your family.
The UK government's not convinced that apps are the right tool.
No country currently has a functioning track and trace app.
I can't speak to those comments.
Australia's app doesn't notify users, only state governments, when someone has been in contact with a patient. And Nine News has been told in some cases the app didn't gather any data at all.
The federal government is adamant the app is working, insisting the country's low case numbers is limiting how effective the app could be, and says it will be more useful as more restrictions are lifted and more people stand around each other.
Good evening from New York. I'm Chris Hayes. Right now, right this moment, there are Americans who are alive and who are healthy who will be dead by the fall. And there are Americans who already died who did not have to, all because of the failures of our government and more specifically, the President of the United States. There is no other conclusion you can reach at this point. At this point, there's nothing left to say but that Donald Trump has gotten Americans killed and is going to get even more Americans killed in unfathomable numbers.
Part of this extensively, the spike in cases is not coming with a spike in death, sadly enough. That's the one thing you look at because that's a big worry.
Well, this is going to sound counterintuitive to those who are trying to avoid another shutdown, because the plan that the mayor is floating, he mentioned it last night on his Facebook Live, actually involves a 35-day shutdown followed by an extended period of lessons learned. You remember the shutdown, the schools, parks, and businesses fully closed, and churches were reluctant to meet for fear of spreading the COVID-19 virus. We all stayed home and only traveled to essential businesses for food and supplies. Well, if I understand the mayor, under this proposal, we can expect more of the same. But coming out of the shutdown will be different, he hopes, now that we've seen what happens when people let their face masks down and gather shoulder to shoulder in large numbers.
We're going to come out after 35 days. Everybody's going to wear their face masks when they're around other people. Everybody's going to social distance. Nobody's going to go out when they're sick. Everybody's going to get tested. We could do that. We could come out, be in orange, and just stay in orange. And if you look at this chart, that also enables us to open up schools in the fall.
Yeah, he's talking about our current stage 4 orange on the city's COVID chart. Everyone is struggling to find a way to get our school kids back in the classroom, and the mayor sees this plan as one possibility, but it would have to start pretty soon. And just how long would we be in this extended period of our best behavior? Well, according to the mayor, until a vaccine is available for everyone, it'll be that long.
I doubt seriously that any vaccine will ever be 100% protected. The best we've ever done is measles, which is 97 to 98% effective.
If only, say, 70, 75% of Americans are willing to get the vaccine, and it's only, say, I think you just said 70, 75% effective, is that going to get us to herd immunity?
Unlikely. And that's one of the reasons why we have to make sure we engage the community as we're doing now, to get community people to help us, for people to understand that we are doing everything we can to show that it's safe and that it's effective. And it's for the good of them as individuals and in society to take the vaccine. So we have a lot of work to do because, as you well know, we've spoken about this intensively in the past, there is a general anti-science, anti-authority, anti-vaccine feeling among some people in this country, an alarmingly large percentage of people, relatively speaking.
The serious child abuse emergency room visits are up 35% during the lockdown. Now, let me tell you what that means. This is very important. Somebody who brings in their child to the emergency room, that's not because they smacked them around and gave them a black eye. These are, and I'm saying this with sadness, these emergency room visits are for children who the parents think they might have killed them. They're unresponsive. They have multiple broken bones. These are the most serious 35% increase in child abuse, and that's directly due to the lockdown, and I'll explain why. Because when you lose your job, the correlation of amount of child abuse found in a home is directly correlated for lower socioeconomic group, unemployment, alcohol abuse. This is markedly increasing during the lockdown when we know that almost half of people making $40,000 a year or less lost their jobs, by far more than people like you and I. And so when these people have children and the schools are closed and there's a tremendous amount of stress in the household, we know that the emergency room visits are going way up. And that's only part A. Part B is that, do you know where the number one place that child abuse is noticed by an outside person? The school.
School.
You close the schools, you have no visibility on the overwhelming majority of child abuse. So this is creating a catastrophic, sad, and simply unspoken harm to the children. You realize, by the way, I didn't mention in that, this is in the article, that when children go to school, that's the number one place where people with children with vision, with need glasses are detected, children that need hearing aids. I mean, the schools
the kids,
are
the kids,
so,
the school lunch program, for some kids, it's the best meal they get all day. Yes.
Exactly. So, you know, when you shut schools, you're really, and there's no risk to the children. Again, there's zero risk to the children. you are directly harming children. I don't understand how people who claim to be so focused on children, teachers unions, I think it's really outrageous. This will go down as the most heinous misapplication of public policy in modern America.
Hospitals, on healthcare workers, paramedics and doctors and nurses, it's really taking a toll on the nation and the healthcare system in general, and especially with the increased number of hospitalizations and cases, it puts a strain during July, which is a very important time of the year, because we tend to see more deaths in the month of July because of the new healthcare professionals that are entering the residency program. So we've got a lot to do. It comes down to simple
measures. Wait, you're about to make something really important point about masks, but what did you tell me? You just said that in the month of July, you see death rates increase because you've got new students or medical, professionals coming online?
Sure. July is typically the month where we have people who doctors, they graduate medical school and they enter residency. So sometimes we tend to see increase in the rate of medical errors and deaths. That's just something that, is well known in the medical field. So that just goes to show you, we have the burden of this virus with new doctors on board. Of course, they're always being supervised by professional, well-trained doctors. But just something to keep in mind is simple measures of protecting yourself so you don't have to enter the hospital, not only because it's July, but we also have another holiday that we're approaching, 4th of July next week. We don't want to see a remake of increasing the number of cases like we did with Memorial Day. But again, just simple measures of wearing your mask, a facial cloth covering, physical distancing, avoiding crowds, and keeping your hands washed and clean until we get a vaccine. That's the only way to eradicate this virus.
So it appears that, 90% of the hospital, or of the beds that's possibly available for COVID patients is occupied. Well, that's actually not accurate. What it means is the current phase that the hospital is in has a 90% occupancy for that particular phase.
According to AnMed Hospital, COVID-19 patients only make up about 6% of all current patients. AnMed released this statement at WYFF News 4 regarding the numbers, saying in part, when our census dropped significantly at the beginning of the COVID-19 outbreak, we appropriately reduced the number of staff beds we report. The fact that our occupancy is high means we are doing a good job of matching our resources to the level of demand during this crisis. Of course, you just heard McMaster mention how we need and want more people to start wearing masks and social distancing here in South Carolina, the people of Anderson County reiterating that same idea.
Josh, I'm sure you would like to talk to this lady because she's very pleasant.
Well, trying to get a hold of anyone in this office is just ridiculous. Yes, I have some questions about town. Are people and businesses in Grants Pass supposed to wear masks? Because they're not wearing masks over at the little subway place up north of town. You got a kid drawing your drink and he's giving it because he can't wear a mask. Aren't restaurant workers supposed to wear masks? And why isn't the guy up there at the little pantry up north of town right before you can get on the freeway, why isn't he wearing a mask when he's working while he's coughing? Are masks required of people who work? Because maybe you better get out and do your goddamn job.
Some employees at a Whole Foods in Cambridge wearing masks with a message, but the store sent them home saying wearing those masks violates the company's policy.
We are simply asking to support what they say they support and really support each other. Like, that's really all it is. It's basic. It's simple. Matter. Black lives matter.
This Cambridge Whole Foods employee puts on a Black Lives Matter mask while making a delivery outside the River Street store. Employees say they've chosen to walk out for not being allowed to wear them.
They told us that we were violating dress code, and we stated to them that we're allowed to wear brands that are industry affiliated.
Wednesday, Savannah Kinzer says 7 employees were sent home, another 13 Thursday. Whole Foods Market responding, saying in part, all team members must comply with our long-standing company dress code, which prohibits clothing with visible slogans, messages, logos, or advertising that are not company related. The company says employees are offered compliant masks, and if they don't want to wear one, they can't work. Kinzer says she's run out of the 85 masks they've given out so far. She says the face covering is not a political statement.
We're going to continue this, and we hope to just normalize it. And we hope that it empowers other people, other stores to do it too, because again, it's not about politics. It's simply about inclusion and equity and making sure that everyone feels welcome at Whole Foods.
Oh, brother. You remember, I just forgot about flatten the curve.
Flatten the curve, everybody. Let's do it. We can do it. We can all work together. What is it going to be? 2 weeks to flatten the curve? What was it? 10 days?
I think it started off as 2 weeks, yeah.
Oh, man. It's unbelievable. You know, and I remember that Tina and I were in Austin still in the other house, and I was glued to the TV, and then this flatten the curve came up, and it was just so obvious that this was not going to be good. It was not going to be a good thing. It was really bad. It was unbelievable. Okay, you're still with us. We appreciate it. Of course, we will be thanking everybody who supported this show and our next show. We'll do that. We'll do a double donation segment on the next show, as we usually do. What are you planning on doing while I am traveling?
Well, I'll probably just lounge. I don't know.
I just lounge.
Maybe I'll go shop. I'll not go shopping. I'll go shopping in real stores. Stores that you walk into. I'll go shopping at
the
Macy's store in San Francisco. They're shutting it down, and it's a big giant store in Union Square.
The one
Square
on Union Square, they're shutting that one down?
They're shutting it down for good because Macy's doesn't know what they're doing.
That was the only reason for going to Union Square.
Well, now there's going to be no reason to go. I'm going to go there. I'm going to do some shopping. If I can see what there is, there's really not much more than perfume there, the way I see it. But it'll be the last Christmas at Macy's.
Do you think they'll turn that into apartments like they're doing in other malls, like other big stores?
It's such a good place for retail, but the place is kind
clearly
of
not.
The building was built for Macy's. It was like a
cornerstone.
I don't know what they're going to do.
That's horrible.
San Francisco's a wreck mess.
That's right.
And now we have the new mayor, who's I thought was kind of a Democrat, but he's going to be cracking down. He's going to Trump-proof San Francisco.
Oh, boy.
To protect the gay community, by the way, from being deported. That's what he said on television.
He's going to deport the gays?
Well, that's what they think Trump's going to do. These people are nuts. And so the Macy's, I'll go there and then I'll feel bad about it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do while you're gone.
Well,
I do want to remind people that since this is a donation segment, that if they're going to... Just thinking about this particular COVID moment, remember when that all happened and how the show helped the show.
Yes. Yes. NoAgendaDonations.com, please. Yes.
Yeah, NoAgendaDonations.
Everyone's always saying we help them during this, and it would be great if you could help us.
I just want to remind everybody.
Yeah, good idea. Now, let's go back to when the cops were just swarming the cities because we had to make sure everyone was wearing a mask. Mask up. Remember that? Mask up? Mask up.
Oh, yeah. It was the worst.
Social distancing. Stay away, slave. Mask up. Back to Strokey Bill's best, if there is such a thing, of COVID.
You have been doing these for the past month, which has put you in contact with more people. Have you been tested for coronavirus? And if so, how frequently are you doing that?
No, I have not been protected. I have not been tested for the coronavirus. For two reasons. One, I've had no symptoms, as my mother would say, knock on wood. And number two, I haven't wanted to take anybody else's place in the process.
But it's not to say that people aren't dying. It is actually to say that people are dying, and people are dying related to an exposure to a respiratory virus. There's huge problems with our diagnostic tool here. PCR is the tool that's been used globally to determine if somebody has COVID or not. And PCR stands for polymerase chain reaction. It's an amplification technique for finding small amounts of DNA. It is a very big dilemma because the presence of that DNA doesn't mean you're ever going to get sick from that virus. Most of us will have that DNA in our bloodstream for a period of time as we go into our genetic update. As we're taking this virus in, we proliferate the virus to get it into enough cells in the body, and then we reach homeostasis where we've taken in enough of that genetic information that we stop making it. And so, or we make tiny amounts of it. And so that that balance with that DNA has nothing to do with whether we're in developed disease or not. From, again, most people exposed to COVID were asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic. And so the presence of the DNA has nothing to do with whether that person is going to die in the coming months.
Well, let's talk about vaccines. The world is abuzz about vaccines as the way in which we might ultimately get past this and have a chance to go back to something approaching normal life, where we can all be back together again because this risk won't be so high. Where are we, Tony, with the vaccine efforts that have been moving forward at unprecedented speed? But of course, they are full of scientific challenges. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think the first thing people need to understand that although timetables are given, whenever you're dealing with a vaccine development, there's never a guarantee that your candidate will be both safe and effective. So there's always the big question mark. However, assuming that there will be one and maybe more safe and effective vaccines, here's where we are with the timeline. There are multiple candidates using different platforms, several of which the United States government and the NIH itself, we are involved in helping to facilitate the development, either directly or indirectly with our sites. If things go the way it looks like they're going, one of these candidates will enter phase 3 trial for efficacy at the end of July. Other candidates will sequentially come in. Another one at the end of August, one in September, and one in October.
And it will be important to encourage people to enroll. So people who are watching this right now might want to pay attention in 2 or 3 weeks to announcements that there might be a vaccine trial enrollment somewhere in your neighborhood, because right. We will depend on the public to sign up and help us figure this out. Let's be clear, these vaccines have already gone through phase 1 and phase 2 trials, so we know that they've been safe, significant number of individuals, and we know that they seem to be capable of raising antibodies, but we haven't actually done the real testing in the field that is going to be in the so-called phase 3 trials. But particularly, Tony, it seems to me, because this disease, COVID-19, has hit particular groups really hard, and I'm talking about older people, people with chronic disease, African Americans, Latinos, we want to be sure that the vaccine enrollment includes those folks as well. Are there ways based on past experience where we are sure that outreach will work and we will get people to sign up from those groups?
Well, thank you, Francis. What Dr. Collins was referring to, leading me into the answer to the question, was that this is something that we have done with all our HIV trials. There is an analogy here. When you're dealing with HIV, there's a disparity of susceptibility, of involvement. 13% of the American population is African American, and 45 to 50% of the new infections. So whenever we do treatment and prevention trials through our networks, we outreach through community representatives and community outreach. We're gonna use that same model to do the same thing for the African-American, Latinx, and Native American populations. In fact, Francis and I right now are very heavily involved in making sure that the trials are quite well represented by the individuals who are most susceptible, not only to infection because of certain circumstances in their life, but also because of the fact that they are more prone to complications because of underlying comorbidities. It's a major goal of the trial to be properly represented, and that's what we're gonna make certainly a high priority.
Coming back to the vaccines, I keep getting asked, Tony, okay, so suppose this all looks really good and you have a vaccine that's safe and effective and we start immunizing people, how long will that protection last when you've got a vaccine? Are you gonna need to take it again a year later? I mean, like the flu, where you have to have a shot every year, or will you get a booster now? Now, what do you think?
Well, this is, Francis, a great question, and it's the reason why we have to be humble about what we do. We do not know the answer to that. We do not know. I mean, you can assume that you're going to get protection at least to take us through the cycle. When you look at natural infection, it's anywhere between 6 months to a year. However, with this spike protein that's being presented in the way that we do it, with primes and in some cases boosts, we're going to assume that there's a degree of protection, but we have to assume that it's going to be finite. It's not going to be like a measles vaccine. So there's going to be follow-up in those cases to see if we might need a boost. We may need a boost to continue the protection. But right now, we do not know how long it lasts.
Herd immunity is something that we've been supporting, and nature supports it.
Herd immunity to COVID-19 is just around the corner, new studies say, suggesting humans are rapidly building natural protections against the virus. That's according to at least two new studies by the Karolinska Institute in Sweden and the University Hospital Tübingen in Germany. The study finds at least 30% of humans now have COVID-specific antibodies, which means they've been exposed to weak samples of the virus and effectively equals a natural vaccine.
Herd immunity is essentially here. It's coming. Like yesterday when you put up the chart to show where the death levels were from the coronavirus, which is down to zero, I said, well, maybe the epidemic is over.
We still need people to wear the mask in public. We still need people to keep social distance and isolation. But Ryan, the one thing I want to try to get across today is we need to do that when we're in our homes also. As you know, I'm a lifelong San Antonian, grew up there, worked there for many years, and I know how many multi-generational families that we have. And while we believe the community is doing a great job of following the rules when they're outside of the home, we really need to be thinking about doing the same thing when we're inside the home. I mean, all of us are capable of catching this disease. None of us are immune from this. And the fact that we need to get across this, in order to protect ourselves, we need to protect our families and our loved ones, we really need to be thinking about the care that we're providing inside the home right now to make sure that we're not spreading this disease inside the home and then making it come outside the house.
So let me get this straight. What you're effectively saying is that people should be wearing masks inside their own homes now?
Ryan, I'm saying if you can't socially distance and can't socially isolate, or if you've been out in public and exposing yourself and you haven't decontaminated yourself good enough when you get home, if you have someone that has underlying medical conditions at home, we really need to be thinking about that. Now, if you're the same two or three people that are living in the same house and you're really taking care of yourself and you're following all the rules, then you probably don't need to wear a mask in your home. But if you've gone out for Memorial Day or 4th of July, or you've gone out to parties, or you've gone out to graduation parties, when you've gone out and you've come back in, you can be bringing that back inside. And I think it's no secret, we all like to relax when we're at home. But if we're not paying attention to how the virus spreads outside or inside the home, we're going to keep spreading this virus.
Customers and employees boycotting side by side outside of the Whole Foods in Cambridge.
We've been told to take our masks off or leave without pay.
It's going on day 18. Some employees walking off the job daily after being reprimanded by management for wearing Black Lives Matter face masks at work.
I think they should let us support any kind of movement that is human rights and that's equal rights.
Until their bottom line is hurt and they see that people care, I don't think they're going to change.
Even the most loyal of shoppers are changing their minds about the company, standing in solidarity with employees.
I feel completely uncomfortable giving them any of my dollars. So we've stopped shopping here.
A Whole Foods spokesperson told CBS News their dress code policy prohibits visible slogans, messages, or logos unrelated to the company, but their employees disagree.
We wear gay pride pins, we wear Red Sox masks, we wear Bruins masks, we're encouraged to.
And I can't understand why they're not changing this policy, because it's so small.
Even though some of these employees are on the verge of losing their jobs, they vow to continue to walk out and to speak out until changes are made.
The Florida Department of Health releasing its daily coronavirus testing report, showing a statewide positivity rate of 11%. But Fox 35 quickly noticing some shocking positivity rates. Countless labs reporting 100% positivity. That means every single person tested was positive. We sifted through the reports to find local testing sites with high numbers. Like this Centricare, 83 people tested and all positive. Check out the Orlando VA, a positivity rate of 76%. NCF Diagnostics has a location in Alachua, 88% of tests coming back positive, and 98% for Orlando Health. How could that be? We investigated these astronomical numbers, contacting every location mentioned. Orlando Health, the only to respond, confirming errors in the report. Its positivity rate is, in fact, only 9.4%.
Now, we just heard back from the Orlando VA. They are looking into the numbers. We haven't heard back from the other two labs or the Florida Health Department of Health, of course. It makes you wonder if these numbers are wrong. Are other numbers on the report also wrong? We'll stay on top of this story.
I have four children. Youngest one is 10 months old. You know, the biggest concern is flying with kids. I don't want them to get sick. And with like a 10-month-old, she's gonna want to crawl, right? And she's at that age where she'll put everything in her mouth, right? And she's always touching things. And then the other concern is, you know, right now it's hard to trust other people, I think.
You have the crowds at the airports going through security. So you're just exposing yourself. And more than that, you have people with this virus that may not show symptoms until, you know, you're on the plane, and then it's too late. Especially if you're going overseas, you can't go anywhere, you're stuck. I'll wait as long as I have to. Even when a vaccine comes available, I'm not gonna be the first one to run out and get it. I'd like to make sure that it's gonna be effective and it works.
I mean, if it lasts a year, maybe 2 years, that's just what we have to do. I mean, you know, I obviously want the kids to get out. I want my wife to go do the things that they want to do. I want to go do things that I want to do. But at this time, it's just what it is. I mean, so we just kind of have to put up with it and make the best out of our time.
Just over 100 days until Election Day. And this morning, we have a new CBS News battleground tracker out that looks at the presidential race in three states heavily impacted by the coronavirus. That's Arizona, Texas, and Florida. Results show former Vice President Joe Biden will be competitive or better in all three states. Mr. Biden and President Trump are tied 46-46 in Arizona. President Trump is up 46-45 in Texas, and the former vice president is up by 6 points, 48-42 in Florida.
New York's Democratic governor Andrew Cuomo seems to be on something of a victory tour, congratulating the state and himself for defeating the virus, even selling this poster, which shows his state getting over the mountain by bringing down the curve during the 111 days of hell, as the governor put it. The poster includes references to his daughters and a boyfriend, little inside jokes. There are no illustrations, however, of the more than 32,000 dead New Yorkers, the highest death toll by far of any state. No rendering on that poster of criticism that Governor Cuomo ignored warnings, no depiction of the study that he could have saved thousands of lives had he and Mayor de Blasio acted sooner. No painting there on the poster of his since rescinded order that nursing homes take all infected patients in. Here's what Governor Cuomo had to say yesterday.
What we went through and what we did was historic, because we did tame the beast. We did turn the corner. We did plateau that mountain. And then we came down the other side. And they will be talking about what we did for decades to come.
And I'll just end with a little global aside, which is the research that's being done about how much better countries run by women have done during the COVID pandemic, from New Zealand to Taiwan to Germany to Finland, et cetera. And, you know, maybe it's not a very big sample, but the kind of inclusive leadership that actually follow the evidence and listen to science has proven to be quite effective.
You take a picture of me. Does that make you feel better? Why don't you get a life, lady?
Dude, I have a life.
No, and it's going around taking pictures of
yeah,
people.
Yeah, because what I you're doing, so can you not follow you? The lines on
keep,
the floor?
Keep your mouth running.
The governor, the mayor is asking us all to wear a mask. And look at you, not wearing a mask.
Oh dear.
I wear a mask to protect myself.
It's a fucking political. It's unbelievable. Now you have accosted me in this store.
You
it's
not a wall that I got to wear a mask. Not wearing a mask.
And if you're going to keep this up, maybe we'll get the police department
hey,
in
Mom,
here.
Hey, Mom, why'd you call 911 then?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God, another one. You people are like monkeys falling out of a tree.
No, you're the monkey that has it.
Hey, I'll tell
dragging
you
those knuckles
y'all
that you've not evolved.
Okay, how's that grab you?
Ever heard of Darwinism, evolution, evolve, mister?
Why don't you burn something down?
Why don't you go back to where you were?
Why don't you get a paranormal down or something, you know? You must be the one who's...
Are you burning crosses? Are you burning crosses?
People are fucking idiots, man.
You no, you're the idiot.
Yeah, yeah. But you're the ones playing your life on a freaking computer. You have no life. So this is what your life is?
Dude, I'm out doing my shopping.
Unbelievable.
You're unbelievable. Good luck with the virus. Your whole family tree is getting cut off at its roots.
85 infants have tested positive for coronavirus in Nueces County, which includes Corpus Christi. The public health director made that announcement this week and urged residents to wear masks and practice social distancing.
These babies have not even had their first birthday yet. Please help us to stop the spread of this disease.
No other details were provided on the condition of those infants, but Corpus Christi currently has 82 deaths linked to the virus.
Chief, so tell us, what more do we know about it came to be, and also about that White House relationship with Dr. Fauci?
Well, what we've seen is an escalating war between the White House and Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci has served some five presidents before President Trump, and he's someone who's very restricted, He was someone who also said before this op-ed was written by Peter Navarro that that the American public should really trust scientists, including himself.
The White House, you had your first conversation with President Trump, we are told, this week perhaps a month or longer. You had a meeting with the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, but just yesterday he called you irresponsible for a statement you made comparing, saying that this pandemic could be worse than the 1918 pandemic. You also have been attacked, as you know, by Peter Navarro, the White House advisor. Are you convinced that the White House is not trying to discredit you, Dr. Fauci?
You know, I think you got to be careful when you say the White House. There are the White House in general is not trying to. Certainly the president is not. I certainly believe that Mark Meadows is not. What happened with Peter Navarro and that editorial, I can't even comment on that. That just is beyond my comprehension why he did that. But I do not believe that the White House is trying to discredit me. No, I don't.
Do you think there are individuals in the White House who are?
Well, I already mentioned one.
And Mark Meadows saying you're irresponsible for that comment?
Well, what happened there is that was something that was said in another interview where I went, where there could have been a misunderstanding that I was equating them. So one of the things we wanted to do was to correct that, which I did in an interview that I had just like yesterday, I believe. I don't think he was calling me irresponsible as a person. I think he was referring to his concern that there was going to be some misunderstanding. I don't have a problem with that. Mark and I are on very good terms.
Let me ask it this way, Dr. Fauci. Do you think you have the full backing and support of the White House from the president on down?
I do. I believe I do. I spoke to the president about that. I believe I do.
And why do you think they've been trying to limit your public appearances?
Well, I think it's a question of different messages getting out. You know, the real emphasis right now, you know, is on more of trying to get the country opened again and economic messages. I don't think there's going to be that many. Yes, it varies. There are some times when I'm on a lot and there's some times when I'm not. Here I am with you. You know, I always like to be on with you. I'm glad they said yes to that.
And we appreciate it. Do you have a worry, though, Dr. Fauci, that the anti-vaccine movement could interfere with this timetable?
Yes, I do, because, I mean, we have to admit and realize that there is an anti-vax movement that we've had to struggle with in this country. And I believe the solution to that would be community engagement and community outreach to get people that are trusted by the community to go out there and explain to them the importance of not only getting engaged in the vaccine trial, but the importance of when the vaccine is shown to be safe and effective, to actually take the vaccine, because it could be life-saving and it certainly would be the solution to this terrible pandemic.
We're not just fighting an epidemic, we're fighting an infodemic. This famous quote from WHO Director General has been widely shared. So what is an infodemic? An infodemic is an excessive amount of information about a problem, making it difficult to identify a solution. During a health emergency, An infodemic can drown out reliable information and allow rumors to spread more easily, impeding an effective public health response. Why is it happening now? Information can spread faster than a virus. With rapid growth of digital communications and social media platforms, information spreads fast from online to our physical lives. And how does it affect us? Online information can negatively affect our psychology, daily lives, and behaviors, worsening the ongoing crisis at hand. Infodemics make it difficult to recognize accurate and reliable information that tells people what preventative actions they should take. Some even promote stigma, discrimination, or violence. Therefore, we all play an important role to share trustworthy information and reduce disinformation. Here are simple actions we can do to mitigate the infodemic. 1. Look for facts and evidence. Be critical when receiving information. Question the source for accuracy and evidence. Compare with other sources. 2. Choose carefully. Share, like, or forward only content from trusted sources. 3. Be cautious. Do not reshare, forward, or like false information you know is not true. 4. Be a good example. Correct or call out people in your social networks when they post something untrue. Refer them to verified content and expert organizations for further information. 5. Spend less time online. Only seek the latest information at specific times of the day, once or twice a day if needed. Exercise, listen to music, or read a book. This helps to maintain good physical and mental health. Together, let's combat disinformation and misinformation. Turn the infodemic into a positive information experience, one that promotes facts and science.
Today, my administration reached a historic agreement with Pfizer to produce and deliver 100 million doses of their vaccine immediately following its approval. Hopefully, the approval process will go very quickly, and we think we have a winner there. We also think we have other companies right behind that are doing very well in the vaccines, long ahead of schedule. As part of Operation Warp Speed, this agreement will also ensure that we receive an additional 500 million doses shortly thereafter. This is another crucial step in our effort to develop, manufacture, and distribute a vaccine in record-breaking time, really a very small fraction of the time based on previous schedules. I want to thank the FDA. I want to thank everybody involved. It's been an incredible process.
So I think the first issue with the trial is that what's significant is that the president and the government agreed to offer solidarity and participate in the trial, which is being led by Oxford University through South Africa's Wits University. The difficulty, of course, is one trying to secure a sufficient number of volunteers for the trial. With, as you correctly point out, within a climate where the numbers of people living with COVID are increasing, and we also estimate that that is a significant undercount because our testing strategy has been hampered by the lack of available testing kits. So the criteria for testing has changed, and in effect it amounts to rationing at the moment. The second issue with the trial, which actually is, involves quite significantly a pharmaceutical company called AstraZeneca. And the issue around AstraZeneca's relationship with Oxford, the relationship with the South African government, as in the contractual relationship, including Wits University and clinical participants in other parts of the world, in Brazil as well, is unclear. We calling for transparency in those agreements, because on the one hand, if we are going to participate in a trial that is trying to ensure equitable access to a vaccine if it is successful.
And I had a nurse at Walter Reed Hospital who would bend down and whisper in my ear.
Wow.
And go home and get me pillows. They would make sure they'd actually, probably nothing ever taught in, you can't do it in the COVID time, but they'd actually breathe in my nostrils to make me move, to get me moving.
I understand hospitals are so overwhelmed in one county in southern Texas so that doctors have to choose who to send home to die. What are you learning?
Hey, Wolf, this is happening in Starr County down there in South Texas, an area that has been the hotspot within this Texas hotspot. County officials there saying at the county hospital in Starr County that they're going to create essentially ethics and triage teams to go through the patients and determine which patients can be treated there at the hospital and which patients might be too sick to be treated and have to go home and wait to die, essentially. This because the number of COVID patients has exploded there over the course of just the last month. County officials say they didn't have any COVID patients about a month ago. Now they have more than 1,400, more than 40 added to the rolls there yesterday. So a great deal of concern there. Hospitalizations and deaths up. The number of overall new cases is beginning to show signs of plateauing, but there's still disturbing details in this medical data. Here in Dallas County, the county judge announced that one of the people who died, died today, was a 5-year-old child.
The top 10 videos that spread lies about you had almost 5 million views. It's also pointed out that according to Signal Labs, which is a media analysis company that tracks this, misinformation about you is the most widespread of all coronavirus falsehoods. So there's a conspiracy theory that one of our viewers asked about. I just want to play that that sound.
What would you say to the fringe portions of the public, like conspiracy theorists, that seem to think that you're somehow responsible for the outbreak?
There's also a conspiracy theory that you're pushing vaccines because you're going to inject people with a tracking device when they get the vaccine. It's all part of a so-called globalist plot to control the world. QAnon folks are, you know, which is actually a group that's been targeting me as well lately. They're claiming falsely that I'm somehow connected with Jeffrey Epstein and global cabalists of sex traffickers. It's insane. What do you say to people who believe this stuff? Because, I mean, I'm sure you are inundated by, I am, by people direct messaging me just insane stuff. It's not at all. I mean, I can tell you, I get stuff from people who seem, you know, they have lives, they have families. I don't know if they genuinely believe this or they've just been misled. But you know, and for me, it's, you know, they claim I was on Jeffrey Epstein's airplane and going to his island with Tom Hanks or I mean, just insane, crazy stuff. Do you think, I know internet companies are looking at this. Do you wish that they would play a role in taking stuff down, which is as demonstrably false? Because, I mean, it does have real world, it does have real world impact on vaccines or, you know, a nut showing up to a pizza parlor in Washington, D.C. with a gun.
Yeah, in some cases, they are taking things down. It's a bad combination, a pandemic and social media and people looking for a very simple explanation. Who's the bad guy here? And a lot of that's been connected to politics, more in the U.S. than in other locations. And, you know, of course, vaccines weren't popular with everybody even before this all started. So I'm a big believer in getting the truth out, and but it's kind of not as titillating to say, you know, Cooper is innocent. You know, that's not as exciting. You don't forward that to quite as many people as you do the accusation.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention revealed the actual number of coronavirus infections nationwide may be 24 times higher than the public count. This comes as the Trump administration's opposing more federal funding for COVID-19 testing. The White House has refused to spend up to $8 billion already allocated for testing, even though many states and cities face severe testing shortages.
This morning, as COVID cases mount across the country, the mass debate is intensifying.
People are very passionate on both sides of the great mass debate.
The partisan mass debate is heating up.
Mass debate's growing.
The president is trying to have us cover the mass debate.
CVS, Target, and Walgreens are getting in on the mass debate.
The mass debate now taking center stage at local restaurants.
It's 9 minutes after six now, and there's new video of a raging mass debate. The mass debate in Georgia is getting ugly.
The great mass debate in West Virginia might soon be coming to an end.
This mass debate is far from over.
How many mass debates have you gotten into? Love to hear it.
The mass debate was taken to a whole nother level.
Bishop David Zubik tells Pittsburgh's Action News 4 he found himself in the middle of a mass debate.
We'll dive deeper into this pet store mass debate.
So we're going to begin with this thing we're calling the great mass debate.
I think we're going to get to a point where eye protection is recommended.
You know, it might. I mean, if you really want perfect protection of your mucosal surfaces, just for your audience, Jen, as you very well know, you have mucosa in the nose, mucosa in the mouth, but you also have mucosa in the eye. And that's one of the things that, you know, theoretically, you should protect all the mucosal surfaces. So if you have goggles or an eye shield, you should use it. I mean, it's not universally recommended, but if you really want to be complete, you should probably use it if you can. It's just that it's so easy for people to just make a cloth mask.
Moderna vaccines sound concerning. We looked. After the second dose, at least 80% of participants experienced a systemic side effect, ranging from severe chills to fevers. So are these vaccines safe?
Well, the FDA, not being pressured, will look hard at that. The FDA is the gold standard of regulators, and their current guidance on this, if they stick with that, is very, very appropriate. And, you know, the side effects were not super severe. That is, it didn't cause permanent health problems for the things there. They, you know, Moderna did have to go with a fairly high dose. And so, you know, to get the antibodies, some of the other vaccines are going able to go with lower doses to get responses that are pretty high, including the J&J and the Pfizer. And so there's a lot of characteristics of these vaccines. It's great that we have multiple of them that are going out there. And yes,
you know the data better than I do. But the data showed that everybody with a high dose had a side effect.
Yeah, but some of that is not dramatic, where, you know, it's just, you know, super painful. But yes, there, we need to make sure there's not severe side effects. The FDA, I think will do a good job of that, despite the pressure.
How many doses of the vaccine will we need?
Well, none of the vaccines at this point appear like they'll work with a single dose. That was the hope at the very beginning. Maybe one of them, particularly in the second generation, won't surprise us. We hope just two, although in the elderly, sometimes it takes more. And so making sure we have lots of elderly people in the trial will give us that data.
The gentleman yields back. I would remind Mr. Jordan, Mr. Biggs, and Mr. Johnson to stop violating the rules of the committee, to stop violating the safety of the members of the committee, to stop holding themselves out as not caring by refusing to wear their masks.
Can we get the picture? Is it permissible to drink a sip of coffee?
It is not permissible.
Not to drink.
We can't drink coffee in the room.
I'm getting ready to ask questions now.
Mr.
Mr.
Gates is ready now.
No. He went.
He went, and that's why I took off my mask, Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to go.
Okay.
Mr. Jordan is recognized.
It wasn't claiming my time. In April, President Trump irresponsibly suggested that the American people inject themselves with bleach. Was that superb? Yes or no?
That's not what I heard.
That's exactly what he said. That's what the American people heard, and you know it. And you can't defend it. Let's move on to May.
Tonight, the startling new prediction from the CDC. America could see 20,000 more deaths in the next 3 weeks. And Florida, in the middle of a pandemic, now bracing for a hurricane. Florida's governor declaring a state of emergency, shutting down COVID testing sites. The president on the ground there tonight, greeting a crowd of supporters without masks. All this as Hurricane Isaias pounds the Caribbean with devastating floods and is now threatening major cities along the East Coast. Deadline looming. More than 25 million Americans will lose critical unemployment aid at midnight as Congress goes home for the weekend without reaching a deal. Unfounded attacks on mail-in voting. The president continues to undermine the long-standing practice of voting by mail. Growing concerns that the U.S. Postal Service, led by one of President Trump's biggest donors, is slowing mail service.
Is that mail is backing up, is getting delayed.
Democrats tonight accuse President Trump of undermining democracy. Bitcoin bust. Tonight, Florida authorities arrest the mastermind behind that Twitter attack of 130 accounts, including President Obama, Jeff Bezos, and Elon Musk. Turns out, he's 17 years old. And tonight, CBS's Steve Hartman is on the road with a local businessman who's helping send 75 kids to college.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Fauci, do protests increase the spread of the virus?
Do protests increase the spread of the virus? I think I can make a general statement.
Well, 500,000 protesters on June 6th alone. Yeah. I'm just asking, that number of people, does it increase the spread of the virus?
Crowding together, particularly when you're not wearing a mask, contributes to the spread of the virus.
Should we limit the protesting?
I'm not sure what you mean. How do we say limit the protesting?
Should the government limit the protesting?
I don't think that's relevant to...
Well, you just said if it increases the spread of the virus, I'm just asking, should we limit it?
Well, I'm not in a position to determine what the government can do in a forceful way.
Well, you make all kinds of recommendations. You make comments on dating, on baseball, on everything you can imagine. I'm just asking, you just said that protests increase the spread. I'm just asking, should we try to limit the protests?
No, I think I would leave that to people who have more of a position to do that. I can tell you.
Government stopping people from going to church, Dr. Fauci?
Yeah.
Last week in the Calvary Chapel case, five liberals on the Supreme Court said it was okay for Nevada to limit church services. Justice Gorsuch said it best. He said there's no world in which the Constitution permits Nevada to favor Caesar's Palace over Calvary Chapel. I'm just asking, is there a world where the Constitution says you can favor one First Amendment liberty, protesting, over another, practicing your faith?
I'm not favoring anybody over anybody. I'm just making a statement that's a broad statement, that avoid crowds of any type, no matter where you are, because that leads to the acquisition and transmission. And I don't judge one crowd versus another crowd. When you're in a crowd, particularly if you're not wearing a mask, that induces the spread.
It's a simple question, doctor. Should we limit the protests? Government is obviously limiting people going to church. And look, there's been no violence that I can see at church. I haven't seen people during a church service go out and harm police officers or burn buildings. But we know that. I mean, for 63 days, 9 weeks, it's been happening in Portland.
Right. Yeah.
Well, one night in Chicago, 49 officers were injured, but no limit to protests. But boy, you can't go to church on Sunday.
What was the?
I don't know how many times I can answer that. I'm not going to opine on limiting anything. I'm just going to tell you.
You've opined on a lot of things, Dr. Fauci.
Yeah, but I've never.
This is something that directly impacts the spread of the virus, and I'm asking your position on the protests.
Yeah, I'm not going to opine on limiting anything. I'm telling you what it is, the danger. And you can make your own conclusion about that. You should stay away from crowds, no matter where the crowds are.
Government has stopped people from going to work. In fact, just in New Jersey 4 days ago, Ian Smith, Frank Trombetta were arrested for opening up, for trying to operate their business, their gym. They were arrested. But my bet is, if these two individuals who own this gym were outside just in front of their gym, and all the people who were working out in their gym were outside protesting, they'd been just fine. But because they were in the gym working out, actually running their business, they got arrested. You think that's okay?
You know, I'm not going to opine on who gets arrested and who does not. I mean, I you get where I'm going. I'm telling you, as a public health official, I say crowds.
Do you see the inconsistency, though, Dr. Fauci?
There's no inconsistency, Congressman.
So you're allowed to protest millions of people on one day in crowds yelling, screaming, but you try to run your business, you get arrested? And if you stood right outside of that same business and protested, you wouldn't get arrested? You don't see an inconsistency there?
I don't understand what you're asking me as a public health official to opine on who should get arrested or not. That's not my position. You could ask me as much as you want,
advocated for certain businesses. You've advocated for certain businesses to be shut down. I'm just asking you on your position on the protest. I haven't seen one. We've heard a lot about hair salons. I haven't seen one hairstylist who, between haircuts, goes out and attacks police or sets something on fire. But we've seen all kinds of that stuff during protests, and we know the protests actually increase the spread of the virus. You've said that.
I said crowds. I didn't say specifically. I didn't say protests do anything.
So the protests don't increase the spread of the virus?
I didn't say that. You're putting words in my mouth.
No, I just want an answer to the question. Do the protests increase the spread of the virus?
I don't have any scientific evidence on anything. I can tell you that crowds are known, particularly when you don't have a mask, to increase the acquisition and transmission. no matter
so
what.
So you don't have a position on whether the protest increased the spread of the virus or don't increase the spread of the virus.
I'm saying that crowds, wherever the crowds are, can give you an increased probability that there's going to be acquisition and transmission.
But do you understand Americans' concern? Protesting, particularly according to the Democrats, is just fine, but you can't go to work, you can't go to school, you can't go to church. There's limits placed on all three of those fundamental activities, First Amendment activities, but protesting is just fine.
But will you get to meet with them in person, do you think?
Will I what? I'm sorry?
Will you be able to meet with them face to face?
Well, we'll see.
You're going to have to wear masks.
They will have to wear masks.
Will you get tested, do you think, if you have to do that for COVID?
I'm not prepared to say much more than that right
okay.
now. Thank you.
You wear the mask so you don't make somebody else sick.
I want to ask
sick.
You.
What's with this guy?
Steve, that's our time.
Okay.
Take off your mask. Take off your mask. Take off your mask. Take off your mask.
I don't believe that it's as quite as deadly as our government is leading us all to be. I think it's going to be more to do with the vaccine, and they want everyone to have the vaccine, even though you know we don't want it, basically. So that's why I'm here, just giving my support.
So we are here exercising our democratic right to assemble. I'm concerned about the way the country's going in terms of mandatory face mask use. Now, this is my body. Okay, I used to be a nurse, a mental health nurse. And one of the things we learned as mental health nursing students is that it is considered battery to enforceably put something on a person's body without their consent.
COVID-19 was called COVID-19 because it's 19 years since the last bloody disaster, which was the made-up Twin Tower explosions. COVID actually stands for, look, I can't remember what it is, I've had half a beer, but this is all just a reset button. This is to hurry things up. They want to get Trump off his perch. This is the only way they can do it. They've got to stop those elections. They've got to get the Democrats in. They've got to get old sleepy Joe Biden in. What they're looking to do is get the blacks uprising by these Antifa riots. This Democrat state's bloody melting down at the moment because their councillors are all brown enveloped. They're all paid off. We know it's corrupt around the whole Western nations, everywhere. The councillors are all paid off. They're all Marxists, all playing the Chinese game because China pays their wages. That's it.
I mean, it's like pastime for us to have a debate about hydroxychloroquine.
Well, we shouldn't be, but let me just say, first of all, there's many millions of doctors in this country. There's 5 peer-reviewed studies that show it not to be true. There's Dr. Birx, there's Dr. Girard, really, there's Dr. Fauci.
Dr. Fauci said that study is a flawed study.
But I need to do this, Peter, because what you're saying is irresponsible.
All right, let me say this to you, okay? And I reach out to all your viewers. Scott Adams, you know Scott Adams, right? He's the guy who wrote the Dilbert cartoon. He did a beautiful video, 10-minute video on Twitter. And the thesis of the video is that CNN might be killing thousands because of the way they've treated that. So I would just ask, I'll let Scott Adams' video be my defense on this.
Okay, well, can I just say something? I find that to be offensive because he's a comic strip writer. So for you to say
understood.
That. I just said Dr. Fauci, the person that the president of the United States has in charge of testing, Dr. Brett Girard.
As of today, and I say as of today at this hour, we have 33 confirmed positive tests of the virus.
Yesterday we had 22 cases. Today we have 33 cases, so it's gone up by 11. Those are 11 new cases. 22 go to 33.
As we sort through this here in Arkansas, we have 33 confirmed positive cases in Arkansas.
As of today, we have 33 confirmed cases with Boston residents. We expect those numbers to climb.
As of this afternoon, we have 33 Pennsylvanians who have tested positive for COVID-19.
So as of this morning,
There were 33 cases in North Carolina.
Good to you. Lots to get to tonight. I'm Leon Hendricks. We want to start with new information into our newsroom. Within the past couple of hours, there are now 33 confirmed cases of the coronavirus in Michigan.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us for the news at 6. I'm Richard Guerin. Karina Corral has the night off. More cases of the coronavirus were confirmed today in San Luis Obispo County, bringing the total number now to 33.
Right now, Georgia is reporting a total of 99 cases in 19 counties. That is 33 new cases from just yesterday.
Good afternoon. I'm Karen Swenson. More cases and more events affected. Here is the latest coronavirus news. There are now 33 cases in Louisiana.
As expected,
the number of cases of COVID-19 jumps. A total of 33 people in our state have been tested and are confirmed to have the coronavirus.
Day 4 of the shelter-at-home order brought 6 new confirmed cases of the coronavirus to San Luis Obispo County, bringing the total number to 33.
All troopers will be professional, polite, and we'll treat everyone with dignity and respect.
These latest steps as the number of confirmed COVID-19 cases in our island jumps by 33 overnight.
Dr. Fauci, great to see you again. Allison here.
Hi.
I have been listening with rapt attention, but I feel like John didn't get to the really burning question that America has for you, and that is, did you hear that Brad was nominated for an Emmy for playing you?
Yes, I did. What a surreal world we're living in, Allison. I mean, I hope he wins. He's a great actor. I mean, he's one of my favorite actors, so I really do hope he wins.
Have you spoken to him since he played you?
You know, I have not. I would love to meet him because I've been such a great admirer of him and his talent, but I have not spoken to him.
I feel like we can make that happen, Dr. Fauci. I feel like we, you know, you and I have the power to have you meet Brad, because I sort of feel like anything you and I suggest, he does.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Thanks, Allison.
I'm not done with you, Dr. Fauci. Would you like to go up on stage when he wins? Would you like to be there to help accept the Emmy Award?
Yeah. You know, Allison, the only reason I have hesitancy about that is that we're in the middle of an outbreak, a really bad pandemic. And I think that if that association with kind of show business thing might be misinterpreted, that it's I'm not serious about what I'm doing. Hmm. So I'd rather focus on my job and really wish him well that he wins.
I was afraid there was going to be a point that I pushed you too far. And I feel that we have just gotten up to that point. But we really appreciate how playful you have been on the lighter note with all of that. And it was just great. I mean, it was just a great moment to watch, you know, that obviously Brad Pitt is a fan of yours and all of your information as well.
You had all of those claims yesterday. Now you've got new claims today that we just reported. These guards were taking cash in hand while also claiming JobKeeper payments and also taking guests out to supermarkets and 7-Elevens and what have you. I mean, what do you make of all of that?
Well, this is a scandal of monumental proportions. I mean, this is a complete fiasco. And not one single minister in Daniel Andrews' government here in Victoria has taken responsibility for this fiasco, whether that be the police minister, Lisa Neville, the Health Minister, Jenny McCarkos, the Jobs Minister, Martin Bakula, or indeed the Premier, Daniel Andrews. I mean, there are allegations that security guards were bonking those in quarantine. I mean, this is just quite extraordinary.
What is the actual recommendation by the FDA or the CDC to doctors? What is it you are being told if your patient tests positive? Here is what we're recommending you do.
Let's say literally nothing that I know of. It is stay home in isolation for 2 weeks and then potentially either get retested again or, you know, that even that is muddy. And I think one of the biggest points throughout this is people have become so fear-based because of the fear-mongering mainstream media that most people are living in their amygdala, this reptilian, you know, fear-based part of our brain.
Yeah.
And when you do that, critical thinking is out the window. So people are not, they've lost critical thinking. They're reacting with this, you know, immediate response from programming. So for me, it's look at medicine. It is not black and white. It is called the art of medicine. It's the practice of medicine because we look at all kinds of things to come up with a program.
Richard, you with us?
That I have right now is that when the coronavirus took over, President Trump and all his cronies in that White House knew about it and took their money out of the stock market, and nobody is doing anything about it. And now that the stock market is back up, they put their money back in, and nobody has caught that yet. And the other thing is we need to move this world ahead. We've been here 50 million years, they say. Well, I'm 56 tomorrow, and I don't understand why we're not in the Star Wars, like Star Trek. We can make movies about it, but we can't be there. Why are we not so far ahead? Why are our brains not moving us forward? Why is all this money going to all these people that are way up high, and none of it is being put back into our society? Move us ahead. Move us forward. Get out of this debt. Get out of the world. Move us forward. We should be in Star Trek era, and I don't understand why 50 million people for 50 million years can't move us forward.
Richard, thanks for the call. You're calling
I'm
from...
I'm all for that ticket, though.
Tonight, the new warning from the Postal Service. Your ballot might not get counted. President Trump threatens to hold up funding as the post office tells states it can't handle millions of mail-in votes this November. Will your ballot be delivered in time? Stark projection. The CDC says as many as 200,000 people could be killed by the coronavirus before Labor Day. The White House task force warns one state the virus is widespread and expanding. And as Texas closes in on 10,000 deaths, high schools in another hotspot vote to play football this fall. Unmasked. Could the mask you're wearing be worse than no mask at all? The new research and the government guidance on which face coverings work and which ones don't. Conspiracy theory. President Trump questions if Joe Biden's new running mate is eligible to be on the ticket. She is. Why some are calling the false attack on Senator Kamala Harris racist. The first interview from one of the officers in the George Floyd case. What he told investigators about that neon neck maneuver and his first reaction when he learned Floyd was dead. Out of control blaze. A second major wildfire torches Southern California. Will this weekend's weather make the situation even more dangerous? Too close for comfort. The shocking video as a wild bison violently attacks a tourist. Why experts say the animal isn't to blame. And on the road, or at least the side of it. CBS's Steve Hartman with the World War II vet on a cross-country mission for the second time.
This is the CBS Evening News with Nora O'Donnell, reporting from the nation's capital.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us. Nora is off. I'm Margaret Brennan.
Today, California topped 600,000 confirmed cases, the most of any state since the pandemic began, as positivity rates remain above the recommended levels for reopening across much of the country. Dr. Fauci again warned against reopening too quickly.
In your understandable zeal to quickly get back to normal and revive the economy, you can do it if you do it in a measured, prudent way. To think that you can ignore the biologic, it's just not going to happen.
Looking ahead to a possible vaccine, the CDC has reportedly reached out to four states, including Florida, as well as the city of Philadelphia, to begin drafting plans on how they would store and distribute a vaccine, including who gets priority. Margaret?
Well, as the battle against COVID-19 continues, it's also time to get ready for flu season. And this year, there are concerns about a possible twindemic.
They're calling it a potential twindemic, the coronavirus pandemic still going strong at the same time flu season is approaching.
A new term you could be hearing more this fall. Twindemic.
And she says the earlier we get our flu shots, the less likely we'll end up in a twindemic.
The earlier you get that shot, the sooner you have immunity.
This year, with the COVID-19 pandemic expected to coincide with flu season, doctors say the concern over a possible twindemic underscores the need for people to get the flu vaccine.
Do you know the term twindemic?
It's what they're calling a twindemic.
So, Tom, a twindemic is exactly how it sounds.
I want to ask you more, but is twindemic a new word? Did we just make this up, or have we experienced or used the term twindemic in the past?
As far as I know, I think it's made up. So it's specially coined for what we're going through. But it's coined, I think, based on the Latin for where the pandemic comes from. So
the flu shot will be required for all students in Massachusetts. The Department of Public Health just announcing this, that all children from the age of 6 months to those enrolled in college must receive an influenza vaccine by December 31st in order to attend school in January. Exemptions apply to students with medical or religious reasons and those who are homeschooled and higher education students who are completely off campus. State health officials say this new requirement is an important step to reduce flu-related illnesses and the overall impact of respiratory illness during the COVID-19 pandemic.
There will be strong, you know, I suspect the majority of Australians will get vaccinated, and there will be a strong public view that those who choose not to get vaccinated need to, there needs to be some sort of incentive stick, perhaps, through the current programs, including No Jab, No Pay, to make that happen. So I think that is a very reasonable interpretation of what the PM had to say today. Again, looking at specific things like not being able to go into restaurants, not being able to travel internationally.
Police are preparing to launch their aerial arsenal as part of a crackdown on COVID rule breakers. High-powered drones will be used to find people not wearing masks and cars too far from home.
Over the next week, Victoria Police will dispatch drones. They'll be keeping a watch on St Kilda and Port Melbourne Beach, making sure skate parks and playgrounds remain empty, and for those who head to the park, a mask is a must, or at least a face covering. Police have also been using drones to guard the New South Wales border.
There's no escaping this high-powered aerial arsenal. It can be flown for 7 kilometres. The camera is infrared, and it's so clear it can read a vehicle's number plate from 500 metres away.
Doesn't really bother me. I'm doing the right thing, so I've got nothing to hide.
And while this virus touches us all, we got to be honest. It is not an equal opportunity offender. Black, Latino, and Indigenous people are suffering and dying disproportionately. And this is not a coincidence. It is the effect of structural racism.
How much damage has been done by the kind of conspiracy theories that have grown up, particularly on social media, even frankly about you personally? You know, you caused the pandemic. I mean, it's very ad hominem now. Is that sort of, you know, something you can brush aside? Do you think there's real damage done by that kind of conspiracy theory?
You know, it's hard for me, because I'm so, you know, science-oriented, to even, you know, go, oh, come on, not really, people don't really believe that. You know, those things are completely untrue. And to the degree they cause people not to wear masks or seek out the vaccine, you know, or to think this is all some big conspiracy, that's unfortunate. And, you know, countries where the leaders have been more clear, you know, have had more compliance on the masks and social distancing, so that's been a benefit to them. I think it'll die down. I mean, a pandemic is a time when it's not totally surprising that people's concern and, you know, reaching for oversimplistic explanations gets a little bit higher. And, you know, weirdly, it's come at the time of an election in the U.S. that's fairly polarized. So a lot of things, there seems to be some confluence between social media, election, and pandemic that have this at a level that, you know, I certainly never expected to be mentioned in any of those things, because, you know, we were pretty obscure doing our work on infectious disease, which is mostly in poor countries. And this has gotten infectious diseases and, you know, crazy ideas about them into the rich countries in a way that you never would have predicted. You know, the values of the foundation are about saving lives. We have a great track record of achieving that. You know, so I'm not somebody who, you know, can complain, because I've had, you know, this amazing life and get to do this amazing work.
Now let's turn to the US, because it's the country, you know, it's the world's biggest economy, it's the preeminent public health country in the world, it's got the world's best epidemiologists. I mean, why has it done so badly?
Well, we believe in freedom, individual freedom. We optimize for individual rights. You know, there's some bad luck in this, that the CDC's initial test was slow, complicated, didn't work. They didn't let the commercial labs come in. We messed up getting that commercial lab capacity going. We never created a CDC website that would prioritize who was tested so that both we didn't overload the system to avoid taking more than 24 hours to give you results. And we were making sure low-income communities and people who really needed the tests were getting them, as opposed to wealthy people who like to be tested or on a regular basis, or force their delivery people or people who work in their house to be tested every week. So we've had a very uncoordinated testing thing. Even though we have way more PCR machines than any country, we performed at this point, although that was slow to get going, we performed a lot of tests. But the delayed results and the fact that people's behavior, even if they test positive, doesn't change their behavior as much as other countries to take them out of the infection pool. That's where, unfortunately, we had a continued high level of infection through the summer.
Governments have been using a range of Orwellian mind control tricks during the coronavirus crisis. The slogans, the clapping, and the symbols have been carefully used to enable the authorities to take control of our thinking. I'm grateful to Dr. Colin Barron, a former NHS doctor and eminent hypnotherapist who's the author of the book Practical Hypnotherapy, for pointing out to me just how our minds have been taken over and how we've been very successfully and skillfully manipulated into believing the lies we've been fed. Elected governments, aided by specialist behavioural scientists, have been brainwashing millions into accepting the coronavirus propaganda. The rhythm and pattern used in these phrases is not a coincidence. There are usually three words in each phrase, and the phrases run in threes. This isn't a coincidence. It isn't happen chance. Using phrases of three words presented in groups of three is a technique known as the rule of three in psychological conditioning. And that's the reason for the three phrases with which we're all being bombarded. We're being trained and taught at the same time. It's behavioral psychology. Other hypnotherapists have pointed out that if we repeat phrases often enough, then the words and thoughts become implanted in our subconscious minds and then become a belief which motivates our behavior. And so governments repeat slogans which become beliefs. It's called auto-suggestion, along the lines of every day in every way, I'm getting better and better. George Orwell, who invented Newspeak, also understood the importance of the triple three-word phrase. In 1984, his futuristic novel, which was written in 1948, Orwell invented the slogan, war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. If you want a picture of the future, wrote Orwell, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
We are taking a moment to recognize that the throne speech we delivered 8 months ago had no mention of COVID-19. Had no conception of the reality we find ourselves in right now. We need to reset the approach of this government for a recovery, to build back better. And those are big, important decisions. And we need to present that to Parliament and gain the confidence of Parliament to move forward on this ambitious plan.
Somehow we've let politics overrule science. And it's an absurd situation. People have compared this to 1984 and the Ministry of Truth and so on. That's limiting what people can say on objective facts. It's beyond belief. Here's the thing. I think they know that the treatment works. I think that basically they're afraid to even let it be tried, because letting it be tried would show that it works. So the message has to be shut at all costs, because anything will leak out. And in fact, it is leaking out. And you see across the country, people who started to speak up, who've become almost deathly ill and have been turned around in 3 days or sooner even. And these are now public figures who are speaking up, who've said that the medicine saved their life. And it's very difficult to, you know, close all the leaks in that dike that are being suppressed by the media that are trying to do that.
We are seeing fights like this go viral.
I don't have a mask.
Where businesses find themselves at times in verbal or physical confrontations with customers.
My doctor would not let me wear a mask.
Trying to enforce mask requirements, often under state or county orders.
The horrifying videos, you know, they're horrifying. They're not fun.
Steve Reinhardt is CEO of Robotic Assistance Devices, and he's trying to take the ugliness out of these encounters by deploying a robot.
We developed a face mask analytic, so we can either say, look for people with face masks on, look for people without face masks on.
They call the robot Rosa, which means Responsive Observation Security Agent. When Rosa recognizes a person about to enter a business without a mask, you hear and see the warning immediately.
It is a non-biased, non-confrontational approach to reminding people to, you know, wear their face mask.
The robot's creator acknowledges someone could choose to ignore the messages.
Required to wear face masks.
But he says businesses are bracing for the possibility they'll have to enforce COVID-19 safety measures for years to come. And they hope to avoid scenes like this.
You have a machine tell you to do something? It blows my mind that the level of compliance is just skyrocketing.
There's a lot of bad information about therapeutics out there. Debunk some of the myths for us, hydroxychloroquine being one of them.
Well, this is an age of science, but, sometimes it doesn't feel that way. Just the idea is about testing and hydroxychloroquine. The numbers are quite clear. It got confused because the trials were done so poorly, but there's lots of good things coming in the therapeutic area that are, really proven to work without the severe side effects. So, a little bit slow, but a lot of good news to come in that domain.
And if we don't solve the climate problem, do you believe there will be more pandemics, worse pandemics in the future?
Well, that's not the only thing. You'll have incredible instability because your ability to grow food in large parts of the world will be so diminished that you literally have hundreds of millions of migrants and you won't have a thriving global economy because you will have degraded the ecosystems. And there is no quick fix to that thing, unlike the magic vaccine that's a mere year to 2 years at most to come up with.
To all the people of Wuhan, you made a great sacrifice to be in this very strict quarantine. And, I'm very glad that it succeeded, but I'm sure that the difficulties were very great. And so we're thankful that you made these sacrifices. Being at ground zero of an infectious disease is an incredible challenge. And, made changes, work was stopped, your living was very different, and now the goal that all of that had, which is getting the cases down to very small numbers and still being super open about, okay, where are those cases? That critical thing is something that people should feel good about. And, I'm hope that we can get things even more back to normal in the months ahead as, we use testing data to see where do we still need to restrict things and where can we go partially back to normal. So, thank you for your sacrifices.
Tonight, the urgent new warning ahead of the Labor Day weekend, the make or break holiday as we head into fall. Dr. Anthony Fauci pleading with people, stay away from those big crowds that have led to COVID surges, packed pool parties, bars, beaches, and super spreader events. The first death linked to that massive biker rally in South Dakota and the CDC's new timeline on a vaccine, what they're telling states. On the attack, Joe Biden blaming President Trump for what he calls a national emergency as schools struggle to reopen. The president's pushback today and the new alert about Russia targeting Joe Biden's campaign. Did the Trump administration try to bury it? Nancy Pelosi firing back after video of her inside a salon shuttered by law because of COVID. The House Speaker now calling it a setup. The new developments as a rival of Vladimir Putin fights for his life, what officials now say was used to poison him. This cyber attack on one of the country's largest school districts, remote learning down for a third day, whether your kids are at risk. And the chilly challenge that swept the nation, how all that cold cash raised means a major step forward in the fight against ALS.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
I take responsibility for trusting the word of a neighborhood salon that I've been to over the years many times, and that when they said what we're able to accommodate people one person at a time and that we can set up that time, I trusted that. As it turns out, it was a setup. So I take responsibility for falling for a setup. And that's all I'm going to say on that.
We're being told this is the science, but it's not. It's an appeal to authority. It's science because Tony Fauci and Bill Gates tell us it's science. We want to see the studies. We want to see the studies on hydroxychloroquine. We want to see the studies on whether the lockdown is killing more people than the coronavirus. We want to see real science and real risk assessments. And we are not going to take the word. My father told me when I was a child, people in authority lie. And we all, if we are going to continue to live in a democracy, we need to understand that people in authority lie. People in authority will abuse every power that we relinquish to them. And right now, we are giving them the power to micromanage every bit of our lives 24 hours a day. They're going to know where we are. They're going to know the money that we spend. They're going to have access to our children. They're going to have the right to compel unwanted medical interventions on us. We, you know, the Nazis did that in the camps in World War II. They tested vaccines on gypsies and Jews. And the world was so horrified after the war that we signed the Nuremberg Charter. And we all pledged when we do that, we would never again impose unwanted medical interventions on human beings without informed consent.
Do we have enough infrastructure to contact trace the way that we need to?
I think that's why the criteria that you can see the gates that are that the federal government has recommended are
4 weeks ago. Don Baker became the first person in the U.S. to get a shot as part of a phase three clinical trial for a coronavirus vaccine. And now she's back, not just for a visit.
All right. Take a nice deep breath.
But for another shot. That's right. The coronavirus vaccine will likely be given in two shots a few weeks apart.
It's like the boxer going into the ring. You might hit the other guy with one punch and he might go down, but two punches is going to be way more effective.
And that's a problem for several reasons. Many Americans aren't very excited about the coronavirus vaccine. According to a recent CNN poll, 40% of Americans say they won't get it. Second, for those who do take it, it's a logistical challenge to have hundreds of millions of people come in, not once, but twice.
There's no question that this is going to be the most complicated, largest mass vaccination program in human history.
People will have to remember to come in the second time. They might have to take time off work twice and possibly experience unpleasant side effects like fever twice. Government health officials are aware that's a big ask. On the manufacturing end, it's just more complicated to make 660 million doses of a vaccine than 330 million. And it's not just double the vaccine, it's double all the components that go with the vaccine. Two vials with two caps and two stoppers, two syringes with two needles for everybody.
Doing it twice is going to be daunting. It is going to be absolutely daunting.
For Dawn Baker, rolling up her sleeve a second time was about saving lives.
You guys are doing this. You can show me your search warrant before you go through my house.
Search warrant
for what?
Now, what I will explain to you is if you want to listen, you got your phone going?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Right. Now, you're under arrest in relation to incitement.
Incitement.
Yeah. Now, you're not obliged to say or do anything, but anything you say or do may be given evidence.
Excuse me, incitement for what? What on earth? Yeah. Excuse me, what on earth?
Yeah, just put your phone down.
Can you, like,
record this? I'm in my pajamas.
What's this?
Ultrasound in an hour.
Yeah, she's pregnant, so...
Well, I'll take it easy.
What's this about?
I have an ultrasound just let me finish. In an hour.
Let me finish and I'll explain. It's in relation to a Facebook post, in relation to a lockdown protest you put on for Saturday.
Yeah, and I wasn't breaking any laws by doing that.
You are actually. You are breaking law. That's why I'm arresting you. In relation to
how can you arrest her? That's
in front of my two children.
Can't you just say to her, take the post down? Like, come on.
I'm happy to delete the post. Yeah, that's fine. But my two kids are here. I have an ultrasound in an hour. I'm happy to delete the post.
You also have the right to communicate with or to communicate with a legal practitioner. You understand those rights?
Yeah, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, this is a bit unfair. Come on, mate. What about she just doesn't do the event? Like, it's not like she's done it.
Well,
she made a post.
Already committed the offence, so I'm not going to.
So that's an offence.
Now, a search warrant. It titles us, and we're required to seize any computers, any mobile devices you have.
Ridiculous.
You're not taking my phone.
Well, I'm taking any device, mate.
That's my phone. It's nothing to do with her.
COVID has taken this year, just since the outbreak. It's taken more than 100 years. Look, here's the lives. I mean, think about it. More lives this year than any other year for the past 100 years.
Data points from a very recent study published by the Center for Disease Control in mid-August, that surveyed thousands of Americans at the end of June and asked them a variety of questions designed to gauge trends and developments in physical and mental health. And probably the most striking of the statistics was the one that was produced by the following question, quote, have you seriously considered suicide in the past 30 days? A question that was asked among people around the United States from June 24th to June 30th of 2020. Of people 18 to 24, people in the 18 to 24 age range, 25.5%, or essentially one out of every four Americans in that age group, said that yes, they have seriously considered, not fleetingly or as a fantasy, but seriously considered suicide, not in the past year, but in the past 30 days.
All right, we'll hear from Josephine in Livingston, New Jersey on our Biden line.
Good morning.
Morning.
It is very, very sad that this country has come to the point, it's you against me, just like the woman you heard from California. My God, do we really live in America? This idolatry to Lucifer. That's how I label Trump. I have to say it. This idolatry to Lucifer. And even the white evangelical church who proclaims themselves pro-life. They're not pro-life. They're pro-birth. Now they're saying, go die, like this Dr. Atlas that Trump has just hired, who believes in this idea of herd mentality. To get to that herd mentality, 2 million people have to die.
Tony's next on our Trump line from Joppa, Maryland. Go ahead.
Coronavirus in Victoria. That is 63 new cases since my update yesterday. I'm sad to have to report that there have now been 666 Victorians who have lost their life because of this global pandemic. That's an increase of 5 since yesterday's update. 2 of these deaths occurred prior to yesterday. These include one female in her 80s, 3 females in their 90s, 1 female in her 100s, and we send our sincere sympathies and condolences to each of those 5 families. This will be a very difficult time for them.
Yeah, Tom and Sally, a big concern. Good morning. The university plans to make sure every student that attends Saturday's game is free of COVID-19. They're doing this by making sure that those who are attending as part of the big ticket student game package take a COVID-19 test tomorrow. The test is free but mandatory. Only students who show proof of their negative COVID-19 test result will be given a ticket for Saturday's game. But thousands of alumni will also be attending, and interim Austin Health Authority Dr. Mark Escott worries as many as 50 people could catch the virus at Saturday's game.
Our gathering limit's 10.
and having 25,000 people in one space is a concern. So ultimately, people have to make a decision whether or not they're going to go to the game. I will be watching on my TV.
Dr. Escott says he worries the most about the increased risk of transmission in lines for the bathroom and concession stands. Now, keep in mind, UT did eliminate tailgating for this season, and they also plan to provide over 200 hand sanitizing kiosks, as well as enforcing masks for everyone who attends the game.
The same tragic story that happened in Wuhan 6 months ago is now occurring again in the Xinjiang region, as thousands of residents in high-rise buildings shouted and screamed into the night in despair. Xinjiang's capital, Urumqi, has been under strict lockdown for nearly 40 days after authorities announced a resurgence of the CCP virus on July 16th. An Urumqi resident recorded the heartbreaking scene of people living in surrounding buildings, screaming together to vent their frustration. It is clearly audible that the videographer himself was sobbing when filming.
An assistant commissioner has unleashed on anti-lockdown protesters. Luke Cornelius described his frustration at having to prepare the force to face another round of demonstrations this weekend.
To be honest, I feel a bit like a dog returning to eat his own vomit. I mean, it's just, none of us would want to do that, and yeah, I'm sick of it. Please, please don't leave home to engage in an activity which is going to spread the deadly virus and keep us locked up in home even longer.
Bound through the end zone for a touchback, and we go to Michelle.
Well, Al, from August 12th through September 5th, just over 64,000 COVID tests were administered to NFL players, and in that time period, there were 5 positive cases. Now, along with testing, everyone from the front office to the locker room is required to wear a Kinexon proximity chip from the time they walk into the facility until they walk out again. They're also wearing them tonight. They will in all games, so if someone does test positive, the league will know who they were near, at what distance, and for how long. So that is high-tech contact tracing now.
Michelle, it's amazing what's been done, because it was so daunting for so many players and coaches when the protocols came out as the pass is caught by...
Do you still trust the FDA?
I think in the FDA, there's a lot of professionals. Historically, just like the CDC was viewed as the best in the world, the FDA had that same reputation as a top-notch regulator. But, you know, there's been some cracks with some of the things they've said at the commissioner level. Hopefully the staff isn't pulled in that direction.
What about the CDC? You made reference to the reputational damage that's been done to the CDC. Can you take what the CDC says to the bank any longer?
Well, the CDC is largely being written out of the picture, because you have people at the White House who aren't epidemiologists, you know, saying what a great job they've done. And so it's no longer a set of experts. The CDC actually did make some mistakes, the way they thought about testing, the way they hadn't figured out to bring the commercial providers in.
Now, hundreds have gathered here in front of the Washington County Administration Building, calling for the end of a mask mandate, saying they are tired of not living their normal lives.
No more masks! No more masks!
Not on the backs of my kids, or you're going to get more federal funding. That's how I feel about that.
A passionate call for action Friday morning in St. George. Several police officers on standby, as many locals called concerns about coronavirus spikes overblown.
The flu kills more than coronavirus.
Others calling the virus a hoax, or stating that asymptomatic carriers simply do not exist and they cannot be forced to wear masks anywhere as citizens of the United States.
If we want to wear a mask, that's fine. We can take care of ourselves.
Some rally attendees say they shouldn't ever wear masks if they have any medical issues or mental health concerns, or if they feel they simply can't breathe.
When George Floyd was saying, "I can't breathe," and then he died, and now we're wearing a mask, and we say, "I can't breathe," but we're being forced to wear it anyway.
But many say that they believe in all cases, masks jeopardize kids' health. Parents are demanding they have the right to decide what to do with their children.
I'll tell you another reason I'd hate masks. Most child molesters
Love them.
School administrators responding that they don't understand why crowds are protesting them based on a mandate given by the governor.
They blocked off the front entrance to the school building, and we went out to ask them to move, and they attempted to storm the school building.
The school board is implementing the governor's recent order that face shields alone are not enough. And if a parent is adamant that their child cannot wear a mask or a shield, they must fill out a form, including a doctor's note, so the district can review it. In St. George, Katie Krallis, ABC 4 News.
And the tragedy is that this pandemic has been predicted, and in, to some extent it's been caused by us, because we've disrespected the natural world, we've disrespected animals, we've created environments which make it much easier for a pathogen to jump from an animal to a human, where it may cause a new disease, a zoonotic disease as it's called, such as COVID-19. Unfortunately, COVID-19 was incredibly contagious and has raced around the world, causing so much havoc, so much suffering, so much economic chaos. At the same time, all the time, we have been threatened by a much greater challenge, and that is climate change. And to a great extent, it's the same disrespect of the natural world that has led to this climate crisis, because this planet has finite natural resources. And we've been plundering them in many places faster than Mother Nature can restore them. We're in the midst of the sixth great extinction. We depend on healthy ecosystems, and the healthy ecosystem depends on the biodiversity. We need to move into some of these innovations of science, like solar, wind, and tide energy. Otherwise, for my grandchildren and theirs, the future is more than grim. It's very dark. We mustn't let that happen. We have a window of time which is closing, and we need everybody who cares to get together and find solutions now.
37,000 more people be alive today. And we're going to have another influx of cases just between now and January. It's expected that we're going to have somewhere between, depending on which estimate you take, between 138,000 and 178,000 more deaths. And if people just do what we're doing here, and when you're at a social distance, as I am, you can take a mask off, but wear a mask. They estimate that would save about close to 89,000 people.
This newly amended order replaces the city's previous provision that allowed people to take off their masks while outside during the summer months. Masks are part of the daily routine in Cambridge.
99% of people around here wear them.
Wherever you look, it seems everyone is following the rules.
It's rare you see someone who's not wearing it.
Over the summer, the city allowed people to remove face coverings if they could maintain 6 feet of distance from others. But that will change on October 2nd. Masks will now be mandatory just about everywhere, except your own home. So starting next week, when you're crossing a bridge from Boston into Cambridge, you're going to need to mask up. Whether you're riding a bike, on a basketball court, or simply dancing on the sidewalk. Even if you're in a wide open field all by yourself. The city says it's because of a slight uptick in cases as students return to college. The latest order will also require office workers to wear masks at all times, unless they are alone.
I think to have to wear a mask 24/7 outside is over the top.
Those who don't want to play by the rules could face a $300 fine, but the majority of people we spoke with have no problem playing it safe.
I'm pretty much used to it at this point. I've been doing that all summer, so no different for me.
I think it's a really easy measure we could take to protect the public. I mean, it's such a simple thing. The easiest thing we can do to protect each other.
As far as enforcement goes, the city says this is going to be more about education and less about punishment.
The official United States death toll from COVID-19 has passed 200,000, by far the highest in the world. As University of Washington researchers warn, the U.S. is on track to double that death toll by year's end. In the past 24 hours alone, the U.S. reported nearly 1,000 new deaths and over 37,000 new cases, with Minnesota, Montana, Utah, Wisconsin, and Wyoming reporting record levels of infections over the past week. On Tuesday, the COVID-19 Memorial Project placed 20,000 flags across the National Mall, each one symbolizing 10 U.S. residents who've died of the disease since the first recorded U.S. death in February. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi spoke at a memorial for the dead.
This was preventable. Not all of it, but much of it.
Mr. Ford says that we know that the second wave is going to be worse than the first wave. Could you tell me in what way it will be worse?
So I think the potential is that it can be worse. Right now, we're on the upward slope of the second wave. I think the premier, what he's alluding to is the fact is, do we know it's the so-called undulating waves that we've seen in some of the modules, how big those are, we have to see. We always see it better after we have some time to look at the test results. If it is that more tsunami type wave, it will be far worse than the first wave, as we've seen in other countries. How big this wave is going to be, because already we've seen some test results that are equivalent to what our maximum daily amounts were in the first wave. But as I said before, in that time, the maximum tests we're doing a day around that highest peak was around about 10,000 tests. We're doing 41 to 43,000 at the moment. So it's a different curve, different epidemic. So right now, we're anticipating if it keeps going, we have to assume it could be a lot worse than the first wave, especially if it's the second scenario. That's the more of the tsunami one. But so far, it doesn't seem to be going that way. We'd like to hope that we can keep on top of this and hear recommendations from myself and others, medical officers around the province, to ask the public to really focus down now. We really have to hunker down and stay at the task to see if we can flatten this curve like we did the first time. People have gotten very casual, I think, at the end of summer, early fall, and we've seen that effect. But I think by everybody refocusing, and we have some ideas and suggestions of that, we can turn this one around. So hopefully, as a, not the premier's fears, we might be able to flatten it down, and it may not be worse, but we cannot be presumptive on that basis.
BLM, baby. Remember that? All of a sudden, it was okay to go out. Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
If you were protesting and burning the place down, yeah, it was, that was okay. Everything else, no, you had a social distance.
What a crazy that was time.
That was a crock of crap if ever there was.
Isn't it amazing how you kind of just forget that stuff? And just it's like a vague memory, and we just moved on with life. And here we are. Trump is president again. I mean, this is, or it will be president. Let's just hope that all goes well.
Yeah, unless the aliens show up and block him.
Yeah, or Jamie Raskin, whichever is scarier.
Yeah, same thing.
All right, everybody.
Ever look at that guy. He looks like an alien.
He does. Thank you very much to Strokey Bill Walsh for producing the best of COVID. We appreciate you very much, brother. And we look forward to returning on the next episode, which will be 1723, just before we get to Christmas. So please remember us in the meantime at noagendadonations.com. Currently, I am probably my sister might have thrown black bags over everybody's head for some surprise birthday party for my brother-in-law in Italy. So I hope I return. I have no idea where I am at this moment. But I will soon be coming to you from Amsterdam, the Netherlands, on our way back from Italy. Until then, in the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I'll be shopping at Macy's, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll be back on the next episode. Please remember us, really, for Christmas. NoAgendaDonations.com. Until then, adios, mofos, a hooey hooey, and such.